I mean, my son is super clear with this new. We've had some real challenges, so I don't know if there's a lot of time, to be honest. I'm just not being honest, but we shoot me an email. We'll see what we can do.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't want to commit anybody.
No, I understand.
I'm super busy, but
the
USD,
yes. Alphys's workbook is a lot. I have a lot of people in person, so
Alphys is a lot. USD.
G.
Lowercase.
Okay.
I want to train with all of them.
Sure.
Better understanding and making sure one thing. Well, I may want to consider at some point having a advisory group around that whole topic.
I would like that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
personal. Like a regional, you know. I know we remember back in the day when I was a coordinator. And I was learning the job. I mean, I was getting in on. There was a group that met with, you know, like South Bay group at the time I was working in Culver City and Santa Monica. So they had quarterly meetings, and we'd all get together and just kind of share, hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
How are you doing this? Hey, there's a new report. Have you done great? You know, so it was a great networking.
I think that's something we should think about. That was great. That's a great recommendation.
Yeah. Well, now that we're like official board members, you get to just basically say, I'd like to direct staff.
Oh, yes.
That's my favorite word.
Announced, I think it was in the December meeting, that the interim, who was a former HR suit, is now a.
All right, so how you been?
Good.
Yeah,
now,
good. Really good. Really busy.
Good afternoon, everyone. Should be just a couple of more minutes and we'll get started.
Hard to pick up.
I apologize for the
technical disagreement. Absolutely.
You're so cozy.
He's lazy, but
yeah, that's really difficult. I know. It's not easy. Yeah, it's hard enough when there is a structure. Much less when there's not. You know what I mean?
I mean, we got. I mean, you got Clarence.
Well,
he's been disappointed, but.
So yeah, it stands up. We may reach out at some point. I'm sure you guys have like a government relations kind of team.
Yes.
We're working on something around one of those recommendations from the LAO, which is, you know, teaching work. So we do have support from the TLA, and it looks like it's moving forward. We may have a sponsor. When we get to that point, we just want to check.
As long as we can make sure that you're. Well, I think early on in the first conversation we heard you, we talked about the community, how to get its act involved in change. In reality, it's pretty common.
There has to be a sustainable solution. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing that was interesting in the report is the consortium model isn't necessarily good to me, at least from what they said.
Yeah. Okay, thanks everyone for their patience. We're going to get started so we can come to order. First of all, I would like to thank you, Burbank, for hosting us today. And without any further ado, then we'll get started. Mr. Elvis Carillas will lead us with the Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Carillas.
Good afternoon. Is everyone in your right? Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so the first item on the agenda is policy and legislation report. At the time that we put the agenda together, there wasn't anything to report, but there is an update that I would like to make, or a small report, if it pleases the board.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
And basically, it has to do with the trailer language that has been released for the budgets, for the governor's budget. In it, it indicates that indirect cost is limited to 5%. So you have two choices. Basically, you can use whatever your district's approved rate is, or 5% was last year, or 5%, whichever is less. So this makes a difference, because next year, if you were charging below 5%, and in the case of LAUSD, that rate is going to go above 5%, then they will not be able to charge more than 5%. Okay, so I just thought that that was important enough for me to highlight it at this point. And then the other item is the inclusion of the extension of the three-year plan to one more year. So now the original three-year plan includes the year, the school year, 2018-19. So that would be next year.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Absolutely.
So that means that we don't need, that our next plan starts from 1920.
That is correct. And that's the next three-year plan. We do have a yearly plan that will be due next year as well. All right. Moving on to the next item on the agenda. So that's innovation and best practices, and then we have Mr. Matthew Oberlander, who will provide us a report that describes LAUSD's Family Success Initiative and the partnership that we have with the Los Angeles Public Library. Mr. Oberlander?
Good afternoon, honorable members of the Laird Board. I'm Matthew Oberlander. I'm the consortium point person for LAUSD. I'm going to talk very briefly about the Family Success Initiative, and I'm going to highlight one of our partnerships, which is our new partnership with the Los Angeles Public Library. So what is the Family Success Initiative? At its essence, the Family Success Initiative is a combination of our traditional ESL curriculum and parent education modules. And these modules focus on things like digital literacy, immigration, health and wellness, and child development. The vision for the program is to empower emergent bilingual families to support student success and strengthen school communities. So, why was this program created? It was created to answer the state's call to design some kind of program that would help parents Learn how to better assist school children to succeed, which is program area 4 in the ADBG legislation. We tried to, from the beginning, partner very closely with our Office of Parent and Community Services to ensure that all of the modules we created are relevant, that they are helpful in terms of setting up parents to be full partners in the education of their children. We also tried to align our curriculum with the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act EL Civics framework, which means we kind of leveraged the WIOA funding. We created specific modules that not only provide authentic tasks for students, but they've been certified at the state level, and they provide high-quality learning experiences. So we started this program in November, and to date, we have 13 pilot sites. They're at elementary and middle schools. We have sites in all 6 of our local districts, meaning we're touching all of Los Angeles Unified School District. We're very excited to say that we have 300 parents enrolled in the program. And I was at one of the sites this morning in Panorama City, and I talked to all the students, and they were thrilled with the program. They really loved it, and they asked for more, actually. So one of the things we really want to do with this program is we want to make it community relevant. We want to make it connected to students, and we want to connect the families to their communities. So one way we're trying to do that is we're partnering with the Los Angeles Public Library, and we're really excited about this partnership. We feel like our populations overlap. A lot of the students who go to the library say that they take adult education courses, and we feel like it's a great kind of seamless partnership. We also offer complementary services in the sense that there are adult and family literacy programs at the library. There are immigration and career services offered at the library. And so we really think it's about offering more access to learning for students. So in addition to taking an adult ed class, a student can continue learning by going to the library. So there's a great fit there. We also have shared goals in the sense that the library really is sort of, could be considered the heart of a community in some ways. It's where a lot of learning happens. It's where there's sort of an equitable access to information for all people. And adult education also is about creating sort of a strong community of learners and civic participants. We also both, I think, believe very strongly in learner empowerment. And the library is a great place for a person to go to access information and to build critical thinking skills and to build information literacy, which connects very closely to the learning empowerment that adult education provides. So our current plans in terms of our partnership, in April of this year, we're going to have librarians from the community visit the family success classes and do a presentation and talk about the services at the library. And then the following week in April, we're going to try to set up field trips so that students from the family success classes can visit the libraries, they can have a tour, they can work with the librarians, and they can get library cards for themselves and maybe for their children. We're also going to try to take the curriculum and the modules that we've developed already and integrate some of the library information so that each community has, for example, the actual address and name of the library. So as they're learning and as they're going through the module, they'll come out with the relevant information and they'll be set up to go and access their library. In the future, we also hope to expand this idea and this partnership to all the LARIC partners to share the curriculum that we're developing because, as I mentioned earlier, it's aligned with the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, which is a standard curriculum platform for all of the partners. And then we also are going to work very closely with the library to continue to deepen this partnership in hopes that we can help families succeed across Los Angeles together. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Overlander. And now, under Professor personal development, we will have an update provided by Ms. Carey from the Montebello Unified School District. Will give us some update about training that took place last year, and actually it just finished about a month ago, and she will provide us some highlights.
Just a quick comment, if I may. So I think as we, you know, as Larrick, you know, identifies some of these promising practices, programs from across the districts, I'd like to recommend that we submit those to the Educate and Elevate campaign. I know the state is putting together various materials and sort of PR-related things to sort of showcase the work going on in the various consortia, and I think, you know, clearly among the five districts here, there's, you know, hundreds if not thousands of great things going on out there. I think that it would be really great to get that word out. So I'd like to make that recommendation if it pleases the board.
Yeah, it definitely does. And Matthew, thank you so much for your presentation. And I know we're about to get another one here from Carrie, but I'd like to encourage us whenever possible to, for example, this is an LAUSD, LA Public Library partnership, but the rest of us, LACCD, for example, and in particular, we should work together so that we can truly represent a regional approach to these things and perhaps in some form or fashion participate with what's happening. I know it's a pilot now, but I think we'd have interest in building that out.
Thank you and good afternoon. I'm Carrie Froh, the point person from Montebello. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the AIR, American Institute for Research Training, that provided a series of three full-day professional development opportunities over the course of the last few months. The trainings provided PD regarding professional learning communities and communities of practice. About 100 staff members from all five member districts participated. Subject matter experts in particular were encouraged to attend to aid in the collaboration of the ASE, ESL, ABE, CTE, and counseling work groups. This work aligned with the objectives in LARIC's annual plan to provide cross-district professional development opportunities. And the general feedback to these workshops is very positive, and it will continue to help us to work together district to district as a whole.
I have a question. So the communities of practice, not PLC, the communities of practice training, that was the one that was offered to all of the districts. The last training, do you know how many people? I know that we started with 100. What was the number that attended on the last day?
So we had somewhere between 40 and 50 in attendance. I don't have the numbers with me right now, but we can certainly make them available.
40 and 50?
Yes, between that, yes.
So you're talking about the communities of practice training on the last day, not the PLC training that was for LAUSD?
Yes, both sessions had approximately the same attendance.
So 80 total, you're saying?
I don't have the you know, it could be up to 80. So I'm just, so, you know, I'm recollecting the figures that I saw from the signing sheets that have been provided.
So my request is that we are provided with the number of people who are at the communities of practice training, because the PLC training was not a LARIC training, it was an LAUSD training.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. Moving on to the next item on the agenda, it's operations, and we have several updates that we will be providing, and they're starting with LARIC budgets and upcoming deadlines, and Ms. Mon Le from LA Unified will provide an update.
The second quarter progress and expense report is due on March 1st, and Mr. Asturias will certify by March 31st. The state NOVA system is currently unavailable because they're still working out the kinks and glitches to it, and should be refined by June, maybe June 30th, and by then we'll be able to input our quarterly reports into that system.
Sorry, question. So, just because March 1st is Thursday, so the LARIC budget that is due on Thursday is not in the NOVA system because we don't have access to that. It is going to be our which quarter, because it doesn't match.
Yes, that's for the second quarter. So if you'll recall, originally the state required quarterly reports. Actually, LARIC requires quarterly reports. And the reports were due a month after the end of the quarter.
Okay.
Now, we requested from the state to extend that to 2 months simply because they were requesting actuals on each one of those reports, and most districts are not able to compile actuals until 2 months after the end of the quarter. So that's why the March 31st, the December 31st report is due on March 1st.
On our normal spreadsheet. Our
yes.
Normal expenditure spreadsheet.
That is correct.
Okay, so it's for quarter two that goes
June through December. July 1st to December 31st.
That's July
the second quarter.
Got it.
The school year.
So just so I'm clear, so on WIOA, when we report quarterly, I only report what the expenditures in that quarter. I only report the expenditures in that quarter. I'm not adding. So whoever has the spreadsheet from quarter one, in the end it'll total with quarter two. But I'm not doing the total. I'm only providing quarter two expenditures.
Yes, either way is fine. The actual report that you guys...
Right, it has a quarter one already.
It has already quarter one in it. You can just add quarter two to it, so on and so forth, and it automatically adds the figures for you. So your focus, or the focus of the member districts, is on the expenses for that particular quarter.
Okay. Isolated quarter two.
Uh-huh. Yes. Okay. Yeah. And then the actual template adds it all up for you automatically.
Kind of.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that you asked that question because internally there has been a proposal. I mean, you know, it was noted by Ms. Lett that we are not going to be able to enter this information onto the ANOVA system, which is a new accounting system that the state has implemented, right? They're still in beta mode, if you will. And so, internally, our request was given to actually produce reports only when the state requires them versus the quarterly reports that the consortium had been doing. And if that is something that the board may want to consider, we can actually have it as a discussion item next agenda, next month. Dr. Miller?
I think the issue of fiscal reporting is one we should discuss with some degree of understanding and certainty. I also think the issue of us retaining an auditing firm, or you know, to help us keep track of things and to monitor what we're doing, is also something we should do fairly quickly. And perhaps in working with that firm, they can help us, if you will, interpret what the state requirements are for the consortia, let alone those of us as individual entities.
Thank you. If I may just provide some additional information, particularly to the audit firms, we've actually, the point person team and I, have reached out to 4 auditing firms. We have received proposals from 2. We're waiting for 2 additional proposals, and hopefully next month we'll be able to bring you a couple of proposals for your review and evaluation.
Excellent. Thank you.
The next item is the an update on the second LARIC annual conference. Ms. Diana Matsumoto will provide us with an update on activities.
Good afternoon. I wanted to say how enjoyable as co-chair of the planning committee with Mon. An enjoyable time that we're having with the different member district representatives. It's a very talented pool of volunteers, and we're really enjoying the process. So, our latest development is that our keynote speaker is Dr. Kevin Fleming, a passionate advocate for ensuring all students enter the labor market with a competitive edge. I just read that on his bio. He will discuss career readiness in the 21st century. He's currently the vice president for the California Community College Association for Occupational Education. Structurally, we're aligning our workshops. We're going to have 30 workshops at the conference with the ABG strategies of seamless transitions, educational pathways, accelerated learning, and student supports. We received a robust number of submissions this year, and so we're still in the process of selection. We currently have about 350 registrants. We're capping at 500, so that's also looking very good. We have 18, and we have 18 exhibitors. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Matsumoto. Next step on the agenda is Ms. Janita Chavez, who will provide us a brief update on subject matter expert work groups activities.
Good afternoon. As all school districts have resumed instruction, we are preparing to restart the activities of the subject matter expert work groups. We, the point person team, have requested that the members of each work group confer to determine a statement of work, including one deliverable to be completed by the end of the year, meaning May 31st, 2018. After we receive the responses from each work group, we will evaluate the statement of work and reach out to them for questions or requests in request for additional information. Then the final statement of work for each work group will be presented to the executive team for approval at the next March meeting. Now I'd like to take the opportunity to thank all the work groups, because I know how hard you work, how dedicated you are, and that's something that on behalf of the whole one-person team, we appreciate, because it does take time, and we appreciate all you do. That's it for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chavez. Next and last item of the on the operations section of the agenda, then we have Ms. Carrie Frog give us a small presentation on the metrics that the point persons team has put together for the quarterly reports from Montebello. If you'll recall, last time around, the executive team charged us, or the point persons team, with coming up with the specific metrics for the reports to be generated by Montebello to address the audit recommendations provided to LARIC based from the Montebello audit. Ms. Frog?
Thank you. So as Lindsay said, in response to a directive given by the executive team to the point person team at the January 19th open meeting to create metrics for the quarterly reports from MUSD, we'd like to present this suggested draft. Based on the information we were given and our collective expertise, we created metrics for the four categories previously decided on by the executive team. The first category that had been determined was MUSD's efforts to ensure effectiveness of services. So we have a report submitted on time. That's the first metric. Student outcomes, specifically reports generated by TE, the learning gains summary report and the persisters report. We have average class size and cost per student. Those are all under the MUSD's efforts to ensure effectiveness of services. The next category was growth targets. We've unduplicated and duplicated enrollment ratio with possible narrative to explain major changes. We also have a projected percentage of growth comparing end-of-year enrollment and student outcome data. Projected percentage of 5 to 10% from end of year 2017-18 to 2018-19. The third category was expenditures consistent with the regional comprehensive plan goals. So the metrics for that, the report there will be bulleted progress report connected to the objectives of the RCP. And the last category was the activities aligned with LARIC's regional comprehensive plan, and that will also be a bulleted description of activities that are aligned with the RCP.
So I question about, so I can't capture all of that, and I would like a copy so that I feel like I'm not able to actually engage in a conversation or discussion, or if that's what we're doing, about it without having that in front of me to kind of process.
So yeah, I agree. I think, is the intent, Ms. Frog, to bring this forward as an action item for a future meeting?
Yes.
Okay. Then I would echo what Ms. Montes said. It would be helpful to get a copy of what the recommendation is so we could evaluate it. Obviously prior to, with plenty of time before the next meeting.
Yeah. And the point person team, we all have a copy of it as well. So we can share it or we can send it either way.
Just a point of clarification.
Yes.
It sounded good, although I agree with my colleagues here that it would be good to see and talk about it a little bit. Is this a standard that we are developing because of the situation that Montebello is in, or is this one that we would all be expected to follow and comply with?
That's an item of discussion in the agenda that Mr. Garcia has requested.
Okay.
So that's an issue that we have not discussed as of yet in detail or agreed upon as of yet. So and I apologize that we did not have the information available for all of you. We were expecting to have a document viewer, but because of our technical issues, we weren't able to set it all up. So my apologies on that.
So that falls under
the idea was simply to provide you with an update of the work that has been done so far. We will issue a report, submit it to you, and then we can include it as a either a discussion or an action item for next month's meeting.
Okay. I'm kind of a believer in, if you will, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And if, in fact, we are doing this because we're being responsive to the DOE request vis-a-vis the Montebello situation, that's one thing. If we are doing it because we want to hold one of our colleagues' districts accountable in a way that we're not being held accountable, I would have a little bit of an issue with that, because I think the Montebello folks, as do we all, have more than enough work to do than for us to add more work to them. If their local superintendent or the county of LA County or some other entity requires them to do that, that's one thing. I don't know if I feel this organization should do the same thing. For whatever that's just FYI.
I If I just may say, Mr. Ariosti, just 1 second. I just want to say that I certainly appreciate your comments. However, the directive that was given to the point person's team was specifically to create the metrics for the Monogram report.
I totally understand it. I'm not being critical. In fact, I'm incredibly grateful to the point person's team for the work that they have to do, recognizing that we give them work for 5-point person teams as opposed to just the one that we have. But being one of those bureaucratic people that, you know, I just want to make sure that we only require all of us to do what is needed on the basis of our realities, not make busy work.
Absolutely. Thank you. Mr.
Uriosti? I was just going to say that it appears that on discussion item 3, that's something that may come up here today.
Yeah, right.
That is correct. All right, so moving on to the next item on the agenda, we have discussion items. And basically, the discussion items are items that were submitted by specific members from the executive team for discussion at today's meeting. On the agenda, we have listed the name of the district that requested the item, the first 5 items, if you would, have been submitted by Montebello Unified School District via Mr. Dan Garcia, who is the executive board member. So, Mr. Garcia, we're going to start.
Thank you very much, Nandi. Once again, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Dan Garcia. I'm the director of Montebello Unified School District Adult School Program. And Montebello is in a unique situation, and I've been very grateful to work with my executive team members in the fact here that they've been very accommodating and helping me work through some challenges that I'm going through with Montebello Unified School District at this point in time, and I want to thank them once again for that. And I have quite a few discussion items that I would like to continue to grow and have some dialogue on this, because I want to be on the same page. I want to be transparent. I want to make sure that Montebello is being an effective, transparent program within our consortia. And I want to show that the effectiveness of what we are planning to do, what we need to do for Montebello Unified. So first and foremost, our January 19th meeting that we had, it was discussed that Montebello Unified will return, I'm going to give you not the exact amount of money, but $6+ million back to LARIC at this point in time. I met with my superintendent. We are able to cut a check for $5.03 million immediately. I just met with them this afternoon. So we plan to write a check to the LARIC Consortium for $5.03 million immediately, as soon as possible. And what we do ask from the consortium members, if we can, to do a 1.29 June deferment from our CFAT, if we can work with our teams, our financial team with Montebello Unified, to do a deferment on the CFAT document, which is a document that's from the state. So the state would defer it. We would never even see it. It would go directly to the other team members, executive team members, or I should say districts, I'm sorry, if that would be something accommodating by our executive team. But like I said, a check can be cut ASAP, and then if we could do a deferment on the CFAT document of $1.29 million on the CFAT document. And that's my first discussion point at this point. If I could go from there. Questions, comments?
Sure, yeah, just a comment. So again, thank you to Montebello and particularly Mr. Garcia for just his, you know, being really class act and you know, obviously under tremendous duress in terms of, you know, what's happening at Montebello. And he and his team have been very proactive in terms of the requests and so forth that this board has made. You know, I know that there were some actions, some votes taken and action items, you know, in the last meeting in January. And I guess my understanding was that the funds would be available for each of the districts on or before the end of June, was my understanding. And in fact, I believe that's what was voted on and approved by the board. So I would be very I'm trying to choose my words carefully. It'd be very difficult for LAUSD to support any kind of a deferment with that understanding, only because, not, you know, for any other reason than, you know, in our district we have various deadlines we have to meet and have in place in terms of funding in particular, so that we can move forward, you know, with hiring and budget development, which we're in the middle of it as we speak. So that would be one major concern I would have from LAUSD.
If I could piggyback off that, I understand, Mr. Stark, in regards to what you're saying, because the same situation would be for Montebello as well. That's a come. If I could have till June for the deferment on the CFAD for the 1.29, that would be, it would cost us basically a cash flow problem. That's the reason being for the deferment at this point in time. And I understand, I mean, obviously, because you have needs as well. So I just want to piggyback off of that. And that's the reason why I'm bringing that to the table.
So just a point of clarification. Mm-hmm. You say deferment, and then I heard Mr. Stark say that he's putting his, completing his budget for 17-18. So can you commit, or can you find out if you can commit to making that payment, the 1.3 or whatever the amount was, 1.29 million, say prior to June 1st, so that the money could at least be deposited into your budget by 17-18, and I assume Culver City and Burbank might be in a similar situation?
That's a good question, Mr. Rose. What I did... I did some investigative work. I did talk to Neil Kelly from the State Department, obviously. And according to him, if we did something in regards to the CFAD document, if we could work together on that, we can, since the new NOVA system is not in place, we're still doing paper to pen, we could actually possibly have that happen. That's what I was told. I could get it reaffirmed. And it's a matter of just basically shifting our allocation, Montebello's allocation, to the consortia team members. And then on top of that, we would write a check, so that if that's feasible, no problem. No problem at all.
And then just a follow-up question. It's my understanding that LA Unified is the fiscal agent for this consortium. Is that correct? Or does the money come directly from the state?
LA Unified is the fiscal agent for this particular transaction only.
So the check, LARIC in and of itself is not a business entity. So the check would be written to our fiscal agent, which in this case would be LA Unified, and it would be distributed by LA Unified to the districts. And just by way of reminder, LACCD waived its portion of this compensation in order to assist our K-12 colleagues. So that's just by way of a reminder. So just to be clear, so the check itself would be written to Los Angeles Unified School District, and Lanzi, you can work out the details with Dan. And then it would be distributed that way. And then we have the question on the table, and perhaps, Lanzi, you can work with Dan and the state to get the answer to the deferment question, whether or not those monies can be credited to 17-18, which apparently is important. LA Unified, I don't know about Culver City or Burbank, but presumably it might be, so therefore that's what I think I hear people asking for.
I have a question, just in terms of the distribution. So staying on the 5.3, is it 5.3 or 5.03?
5.03.
Okay. So in terms of the 5.03, and my memory may be going, but I'm curious if Montebello is writing the check to the other, returning money to the three districts, is there a reason that Montebello can't write those three amounts to the three different districts, as opposed to it going to LAUSD and then Culver City and Burbank waiting one more time for it to be distributed? I'm just, is there a reason that I'm unaware of?
The only reason, and this was actually addressed at the last meeting, was to have a much cleaner transaction. As LAUSD is acting as the agent, so it creates a fiscal trail, and the transactions are documented via MOUs that of which you all received a copy, which I will be asking to sign today, depending on, you know, kind of what transpires here today. But that was the only reason, to make it a little bit more cleaner in terms of explaining later on what were the intricacies or the components of the transaction itself.
So again, the MOU right now, we have the MOU says Montebello, so does the MOU say Montebello is giving LAUSD this amount of money, and then there's another MOU that says, and then LAUSD is giving these districts their money?
No, it's the same MOU.
It's all spelled out.
So if it's all spelled out in the MOU, then what difference does one check or three checks make in terms of audit trail? Because the audit trail would be the same. I'm not understanding that piece.
Right. You would have to ask your accounting department that. I am not an expert in accounting. However, I was informed that if you have one transaction, if you can trace the funds to one source, and then from that source to, you know, its final destination, it makes it a cleaner transaction.
Well, and also, Montebello writing the check to the fiscal agent for LARIC, which is LA Unified, and LA Unified theoretically can, within a very short period of time, issue three checks as a result, and then you do have a clean financial transaction. Unless the cash flow of Culver City or Burbank is so precarious, which I can't imagine it would be, I don't think the delay of 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks is going to matter to your districts. And most districts have adequate reserves, and all of us, and I'm now putting my fiscal hat on, my vice chancellor of finance hat, we all have adequate cash flow to cover cover payroll, but also to cover grants. So what I mean by that is an entity gets a grant, and maybe it comes from the federal government, maybe it comes from the CDE, but by the time all the paperwork is transacted and all the things are back and forth, if the fiscal starts July 1, it may not be until September, October, November before you have all the paperwork with the DOE and others figured out. So in the meantime, you are carrying that funded project, and then as soon as the money comes in, the district is reimbursed. So this is a very similar type of situation.
And my question, by the way, is not it's not a cash flow. It's not about cash flow. Mm-hmm. That my question was not understanding that it would still follow an audit trail. It would still meet audit trail requirements. It would still do all of that. So.
And Mr. Miller, and like you said, that would be a cash flow problem for Montebello at this point in time. That's something we would have to do a deferment on the CFAD document in June, because of the fact that my district will more than likely be unable to supplement our summertime payroll.
Yeah.
And that's the only.
My comments were not not on the payment side.
Right.
It was just on how the money gets to LA Unified and gets distributed.
Right.
That's all. I certainly understand Montebello's situation, because you are under that situation right now, as is Pasadena Unified, as a matter of fact. So.
Yeah. So I mean, as a discussion item, again, you know, we can all weigh in, but you know, in terms of what was voted on last month, I don't know that any of the discussion we're having today is going to change that, is that my understanding, right?
Well, and
I mean, we can figure out the details in terms of money getting moved around, or, you know, but ultimately the money getting to its destination, you know, in terms of what was decided on the last meeting, again, the expectation would be that would all of those transactions would be
within this
occurring by on or before June 30th.
Right.
I just wanted to be clear on that point.
So if for the distribution of the monies, if Culver City were in that predicament that Montebello is in, I would not be able to authorize a decision about the time frame when that money can actually, then when Montebello can move it from Montebello to the other districts without my fiscal person here. So we voted on something in terms of a time frame for June, by June, that Montebello would move the money, but I don't know that we had the authority to tell Montebello exactly how they could do it.
We didn't have the authority. Montebello presented to this board with their fiscal person and made the proposal, and we accepted it, and we voted on it. And so I don't think we took on any authority other than just agreeing more or less with the proposal that was put forward by Montebello.
As a matter of fact, it's agreeing exactly with the proposal that Montebello submitted. No changes were introduced.
I think we're going to have to go back to the minutes in regards to what Craig presented, because he did state about deferment. So let's go back. We're going to have to go back to the minutes.
Well, but again, though, unless I'm misreading Mr. Stark here, as long as there is a commitment that the monies, all, you know, all six million, whatever it is, are paid within the 17-18 fiscal year, and to quote Mr. Stark, by June 30th, 2018, we're fine.
Yeah. Oh, so
that's not a problem.
Then, all right. So then we don't really. Then we all are in agreement here. I thought the deferment was going to. Maybe I misunderstood.
Oh.
That the deferment was going to be past the current fiscal year. If that's not the case, then it's all good.
Yeah. So 5.03 could be paid out ASAP as a cap, as a check, and then 1.29 on our June CFAD document. On the CFAD, if we could put it to the other districts, that's what I'm asking for.
I think that we're going to have to, perhaps after the meeting, we're going to start looking at the actual figures. The amount that Montebello proposed was 6.3, and the 6.3, 500,000 were carryover, or 4.6 million were carryover, 300,000 was debt and accountability funding for about 500 million, more or less. The 1.2 was part of the allocation that Montebello was to receive this year, 17-18, and then the CFA would be changed for next year. For an additional, for the 1.2 and an additional 1.8 million. That's basically the facts that are, that everybody has, looked at the MOUs that were drafted, and those are the figures based on the report that Montebello submitted.
Well, I mean, like I said, at this point in time, I have until June. I understand that. Like I said, I sound like a broken record.
No, we understand. Part of,
because as of July 1, as I understand that, our allocation is changing altogether. It's
right.
Not going to be what it's been. So that's already out the door as of July 1.
So what are you referring to?
The allocation. Our allocation that was in the past.
Right, so Montebello used to receive an allocation.
Oh, it's not a balance allocation.
Yeah.
I got you. Thank you.
Right. Yeah,
that's okay.
Correct.
Okay.
That's
okay. Yeah.
That's correct.
Thank you.
And so I don't know how would you like to proceed, at this point. We can proceed with the MOUs that we had originally crafted, and then we can introduce an amendment to one of the MOUs to implement some kind of deferral. We can negotiate the dates to see what,
Yes, if I can, I need some time to talk to my superintendent and the financial team. And then, I understand we're under a timeline. Not a problem. I just got to make sure that the superintendent approves it as well as our financial. No, not a problem at all.
Absolutely.
Yeah, again, my only point is that as long as it, I wanted to make sure we weren't doing something different than what we had, agreed on, from last month. That's my only point. So,
right. But I think that what is being proposed is different from where we left it last month. Okay, because where we left it last month was a payment by June 30th from Montebello of $6.3 million. And the amount that Montebello is suggesting can provide at this point is $5 million. So that's a deferment of $1.3 million, more or less.
Till June. Till this June, correct. 1.29 will be paid back via the CFAD document. If we could go that way, we'll go from there. Correct.
I think it's hard to without, because we're not approving minutes, and right now we're talking about a meeting that was January 19th, and nobody's looking at, and I'm not comfortable with dollar amounts being discussed that are not the ones that we talked about potentially without being able to, a visual person, I need to see them up so that as we're having this discussion about the what was agreed to and what was not agreed to, we actually are not looking at that right now. So I think that's important to have.
Yeah, I agree. I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, it's I'm having a difficult time with, I mean, there are discussion items and there are action items, right? And the two really shouldn't be confused, right? Correct. And it almost sounds like we could be talking about a potential action item, so I'm just not clear what it is we're talking about. If it you know, so if it is a proposal for the board's consideration and action, then of course that would need to be a part of a board packet. We need to review it in plenty of time to make, you know, and if it's something that this board wants to revisit for a future action item, you know, I guess so be it. But in terms of a discussion point, yeah, I mean, again, we can have discussion all day long, but it sounds like what Montebello is ultimately asking for is some sort of action from this board that may or may not be in conflict with what we already agreed on, but no one's really clear if that's the case.
That is correct. And so perhaps if it pleases the board, what we can do is we can create a set of visuals for the board to consider with the transaction as it was agreed on January 19th. And then we can get some specific information from Mr. Garcia and then create another set of visuals that describes what he is proposing to do. We can bring that as a discussion item to the next meeting's agenda, and then we can have it as an action item in the April agenda. That would be a possible course of action.
Or we can just bring forward, we can agendize it as an action item, bring forward the necessary actions in at the March meeting and just move forward then. I don't, you know, I think that we can do both at the same time. We can put it as an action item in the process of the action item we're discussing, and we can go from there, because we don't want to drag this out too long.
Right.
And that gives Montebello, it gives Dan time, Mr. Garcia time to go back and talk to the superintendent and his assistant superintendent for business services and sort this out. And the message that he will bring back is the other three districts are, you know, are planning to use these money this year, and they need it sooner than later. So I would recommend that I agree with Ms. Montes, I agree with Mr. Stark, that we need to make sure we have all the proper documentation in front of us, but I think we can do that all at the next meeting, including an updated MOU with the deferment piece in it, or the second payment piece in it, and just take care of it all in one meeting.
Mm-hmm. So, if we want to, so here's the Brown Act question, or the procedural question.
Yes.
How do we make sure that becomes a discussion and action item on the next agenda?
We just post it as an action item.
Okay.
And send out the appropriate documentation 72 hours in advance of the meeting, and we're compliant with Brown Act.
So I want to speak plainly here. What was decided on the 19th was a $6.3 million total, of which 4.6 was one time and 1.6 was ongoing. Is that correct?
No. Of which approximately $5 million was one time and 1.2 was ongoing. The $300,000 are data and accountability funding. That's a one-time funding. And the rest of the fund, of the one-time was carryover funding at the tune of $4.6 million.
Okay. So
And I'm sorry, it's just, you know, 4.6 and change and 300 and change together, that makes approximately $5 million, a little bit over $5 million. Okay.
So then what Mr. Garcia is indicating is that, I guess what I want to ask Mr. Garcia is, you don't really know yet. You'd have to find out if you can meet that June 30th deadline, which is what was brought up by Mr. Lee at the January 19th meeting, correct?
The $5 million is
immediate. But what I'm saying is, of the total that Mr. Lee mm-hmm. talked about, mm-hmm. what you don't know yet is whether, or do you know, whether you can meet that entire total amount by June 30th.
That's correct. What I do know is it would have to be in a deferment, not from a cash flow from Montebello. It would have to come from us not accepting the $1.29 million. Not accepting it from the state or from Larrick. It'd be deferred to the partners here.
Correct. But the reality is you don't know if that's going to take place.
Correct.
By June 30th. That's really the essential question, because I guess, speaking plainly, mm-hmm. if you can meet the January 30th deadline, June 30th deadline, however you distribute the money, mm-hmm. I don't know that I've got a big argument with that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I guess the central point here is whether that June, on or before June 30th, can actually be met. That's the fundamental question.
Okay.
Right.
And I'll come back to the table with that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And actually, I think if Lanzi can be part of that conversation with you, Mr. Garcia, and work with the CDE to determine if all these things can happen, that'll probably bring some sense of security to people
absolutely.
Who make these decisions.
Absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely. In my mind, there are many questions. Dr. Mullen just indicated to me that the CFAC we're talking about is for funding not as of June 30th of this year, but actually for funding next year.
Okay.
So
now that's the question. I asked that question to Mr. Neil Kelly.
Uh-huh.
He said we could re-rectify that now. So if we're able to do that now, we have no problem.
So I think what I'm hearing is that the CDE is willing to reallocate the allocations and remove monies from Montebello and redistribute it according to our action at our last meeting to Burbank and Culver City and LA Unified.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he said, because it's paper
without stopping anything.
It's paper to pencil right now, so we could do an adjustment now. It would change the budget of this for LA Unified and for the other two districts. We might have to resubmit our budgets because they're the money's going back.
Right.
So it could be redistributed. That's the conversation I did have.
So as Ms. Montes just said to me, it's very possible that both the 5.29 or whatever the numbers are, checks can be written directly to the three districts as part of their allocation. That is, they reduce Montebello's allocation, they increase the three, and I assume they're still making payments, the state's still paying the districts, and then they just increase. That's a possibility. So I think you need to work it out with the CDE as to what the possibilities are, bring all that back to us at the next meeting, and we can then take some action that everybody's comfortable with.
Okay.
I guess what I want to clarify is this, and I'm sorry if I sound redundant.
No,
if the deadline is met, then this board does not need to take any action. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm with Mr. Uriassi on that. You know, as long as, you know, as long as we meet everything, or however the checks get written or whatever adjustments need to be made on whatever forms, yeah, as long as it meets the June 30th deadline, I don't think anybody on this board would have a problem with that, if I'm hearing correctly.
Yes, that's what I meant. Yes.
Exactly. Because the way it's been explained, it just changed the manner.
Correct.
Not the actual payment.
Correct. Oh, yeah. No, not the payment. No, not at all. It just changed the manner of the distribution. That's all. That's all it is. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that was item number one. Item number two, Mr. Garcia.
Okay, the next item I have is the quarterly report due dates for Montebello Unified. I'd like to have a discussion on that. As the audience may or may not know, quarterly reports are something that the state auditor's office recommended in regards for Montebello to submit to LARIC consortia or consortium in regards to member effectiveness, enrollment, a slew of things. And I would just like to know when, what dates are we looking at, I mean, in regards to, so we can be prepared as a district to give our relevant information to the consortium members. So that's a discussion point I'd like to have. I know quarterly, but I want specific dates if we can, so I can start working on this as quickly as possible as well, too.
If I may offer a little comment, because you have tasked the point persons team with coming up with the metrics, we wanted to provide you with an update on the metrics. Hopefully, we can present the metrics as an action item for next meeting. And then once we have the metrics firmed up, then we can start looking at what would be the first quarter to start producing the reports. We were talking simultaneously about both things, but then it became evident that without the metrics, really, there isn't much that can be done until there is agreement on how we're going to, you know, measure progress, and then we can start looking at, you know, the starting point of the reports. That was our suggestion.
So I just want to add that definitely having the information, and I request that we have that information prior to the day of the meeting, because I can't process looking at things one day. But in terms of quarterly, just off the top of my head, quarterly is based on the calendar. So quarterly is what quarterly is, I think. Then we would decide, I think the conversation would be, which quarter do we start it in?
Correct.
But I don't imagine that we start the quarter from, it would be whatever matches our normal, like we owe a quarter.
Yeah, the fiscal quarters,
Which is fine, and that's what I'm looking for. That's all we're looking for. So we're consistent, and I know I have deadlines and due dates to get to the consortia and the reports on a timely manner. That's all. That's all I was looking for, though.
Right, so your comment is appreciated, because, I mean, after all, the metrics that we're looking at are collected, you know, and usually reported on a quarterly basis as well.
Mm-hmm. Which leads into the next item, Lanzi. I know I have a lot of items there. The quarterly reports for accountability for all LARIC members. I know Mr. Miller alluded to that question, and it would be something that I know we're doing it for Montebello, but I'm looking at, and I know we talked about it briefly at the last meeting in regards to what it would look like for all our consortium members, because I know that was something that we said that would be very equitable for all the members. So I know that's probably another discussion item, you know, once we get the matrix and what we're looking at for the rest of the consortium members to be part of this process as well.
Absolutely. But I just want to add one more wrinkle to that. I do agree with Dr. Miller, as he indicated earlier, that perhaps including, once we have the auditors in place, their opinion as to, you know, how we're looking at these reports, you know, they may have a different interpretation with their expertise that we, the point persons team, was not able to bring in, because none of us are auditors.
Right.
So, you know, that may add a more focused approach to reports for the entire consortium.
Understandable.
I agree with Dr. Miller from earlier related to this concept of, I think that, and even when you read the AABG August report, those metrics are going to be, we'll all be held accountable to the same metrics, and so we should all look at that as something we should all demonstrate. And my request, as we, and when we get into that discussion, is that we are not, that we not use self-reported data, that we use data that comes directly from reports that we can generate in TE or student information systems, whatever your new thing,
SIS.
So whatever our district's student information systems, with TE, because that is apples to apples, and that we are kind of in the situation we're in based on self-reported data, and in order to kind of avoid that in the future, I requested that we use data that comes that's at least accurate and verifiable. So, just a thought.
Great. Just a thought.
And actually, I want to continue that. Given that three of the K-12s use ASAP, I think then that that will be a huge benefit in being able to generate reports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the common system is TE, however, so I would advocate for, and that's what we're reporting to the state. So I think, you know, again, to echo Ms. Montes's point, I think if we're really comparing apples to apples, I think we should be consistent with whatever the state's requirements are in terms of how we're reporting as a consortium already, and use those reports which come out of TE versus another third-party system that some of us may or may not be using.
And when we get to other areas of effectiveness that are not necessarily reported in TE, that actually do come from our student information system. So by student information system, so even with LAUSD or with the community college, there are reports that we can generate in terms of enrollments, class sizes, waiting list things that we can actually pull the data from. So, but definitely TE is number one because it is used across all agencies. But I think it will depend on what the data or what the metrics we are looking to capture are.
Correct. Okay,
item number four.
Last item for me. Member of
Becky has one.
No, you have two.
Two more? Jeez. Okay, LARIC office expense report. Okay, that's something I would like to see as a quarterly report, what our expenditures are with the actual LARIC office expenses, what we're spending it on, where is it going. I know I'm a new member, so maybe it has been in the past that you have submitted reports from the LARIC office, but I would like to start seeing that on a quarterly basis and to see what we're doing and where our monies are being spent.
Yes, we'll be more than happy to provide it, to provide those reports. The last report that we did was last September, and it covered the entire year for the LARIC office. You know, I can make the September minutes available to you and the handouts if you'd like to have a copy of that. And we really haven't received specific direction from the executive team as to how often to provide reports, so we have defaulted at least on a yearly basis. But if the board would like to direct the LARIC office to provide reports on a quarterly basis, we'll be more than happy to comply.
I think that's a recommendation I'd like to see. That's me. I would like to see it on a quarterly basis.
So in terms of the discussion, I think, and I know it's got to go to an action place somewhere down the road, but as you know, as we talk about the LARIC office getting bigger and additional people, I think in addition to the expense report, an activity report, so something that allows us to see kind of what's going on, where it's happening, all the different things that are taking place, and whether it's you, the advisors, the fiscal people, you know, just to have a very clear picture of the activity and expenses that are taking place.
Absolutely. The only thing that I would like to make sure that the board understands at this point is that none of these people have been hired.
Yes, no,
understand.
I get it. Yeah. It's on my list. I know that's my list.
There are some challenges there that we have experienced so far. And the other thing, as we're talking about reports, I just like to put in a plug for the timeliness of reports from districts. We suffer from multiple requests for reports, and sometimes we don't receive them. And I know we're all really, really busy, but I would like to stress that factor, because our timeliness to report to the state and to report to you depends on the timeliness of the reports that we are supposed to receive from each one of you.
So you're basically saying we need to hire staff to write more reports that we don't have time to read. So I think we just need to be very careful about this whole process. So I think we need to find ways to easily and quickly communicate what's happening, build the mutual trust and respect that we need, but not get ourselves bogged down in in voluminous documents that no one's going to really pay attention to anyway.
Were you talking about the Lancy expense reports or expenditure reports, or were you talking about other reports that we're not submitting on time?
Specifically, you know, in general, it happens across the board, but specifically the expense and progress reports. I mean, those we are requesting on a quarterly basis because we report, you know, we compile them quarterly, if you will, and often we have difficulty, you know, receiving the reports. I've worked, Ms. Le has worked until 8, 9 at night putting reports together that we receive the same day so that we can meet the deadline from the state. And last time around, we missed our deadline by 2 days. And, you know, not a good thing because then that is a measurement of effectiveness that the state is looking at in terms of, you know, timely reporting.
Is there a report other than expenditure reports that you're talking about? Because I know I do those expenditure reports, but is there some other report that it were...
Well, along with the expenditure report, there's supposed to be a progress report, and the progress is often not included with the expenditure report.
So the progress report, meaning those four, three boxes on the bottom that say, are you doing the activities?
That's correct.
The narratives.
The narratives, yes.
Got it. It's part of the same report.
All right. Last item for me. Member effectiveness of classroom closure, i.e. enrollment percentages, average daily attendance, and timeline of closures prior to closure of a class. The reason I bring up this item, Montevallo Unified, we recently adopted a board policy in regards to enrollment for our classes per the state audit recommendation. State audit recommendation was 10 students in a high school diploma program / ESL program. We went above 10. We were at 15. We implemented 15 students enrolled in that class. Our CTE, we're asking for 10 or more. And our for adults with disabilities, we're asking for 8 or more. Now, which brings me to my question with my district is in regards to prior to us having to close a class, I'd like to get some input from our members here in regards to what are some of your recommendations prior to having to close a class, i.e. average daily attendance, is it 70%, 80%, 90% of the time your students you want in your classroom? Do you have an enrollment policy in regards to how many you're supposed to have in your class, meaning a board policy, I should say? I would like to have that as a discussion point because I'd like to take that back to my district prior to having to take action in closing classes in the future because of the fact that I want to show member effectiveness once again because if my classroom enrollment is low, obviously then I have to take action per my board policy now. So I would like to get some feedback from my colleagues at this point to see where we could get some of your recommendations so I can go back to the table at my district and go from there. I'm looking more for like an average daily attendance, to be honest with you, opposed to just the enrollment factor. Enrollment's enrollment, and I know in the past Burbank Unified has talked about this a little bit in regards to enrollment. In this, enrollment's one thing, but the actual bodies in the seats is another. So if we could have a little bit of a discussion on that, I would appreciate that so I could take that back to my district to give some thoughts to my my superintendent to move forward and my assistant superintendent. To the floor, please.
Yeah, one comment I have is I think, when you talk about class sizes and so forth, many of those items are negotiated with our labor partners. So I think we need to be careful and sensitive to having recommendations put forward that may or may not be, a part of the negotiation process that each of our districts, participates, as I said, with our labor partners about. So if it's just, kind of like, hey, what do you do? you know, in LA, or what do you do in, you know, Culver City? I mean, we can certainly share that. I guess the question would be, you know, to what purpose? Because, you know, obviously we're bringing up a lot today in terms of metrics, right? And it's a big discussion, right? We can be here for weeks talking about these different things, right? But I think as a board, I'm just saying we want to be careful, I think, as a board, given and not overreach on, you know, again, providing recommendations or attempting to rewrite certain policies that may or may not necessarily be consistent with, you know, locally negotiated contracts or CBAs, et cetera.
So I hear it as kind of a discussion and sharing best practices. Just so you know, Culver City does not have a board policy in terms of adult ed class size. We don't have a contract that has minimum class size to close. So I am using my professional judgment of many, many years. So so it would be good to, for me also, just to have the conversation around what are, you know, the discussion, not mm-hmm. from a policy or recommendations point of view, but just from an understanding, you know, where everybody is, what they're thinking, what plays into some of those decisions, especially as you're establishing new things, you know.
So, I mean, one thing we could do, again, I don't know what conversation we want to have today. It seems a little open-ended, but we can certainly direct staff to come back and bring, you know, examples of whatever policies or procedures, practices that, you know, are currently, you know, we're currently working with, if that's helpful. But yeah, I don't know that I'm prepared to really speak in great detail about it, but I'd be happy to have staff come forward and present on specific topics if that would be helpful in the future.
Mr. Uresti?
Yeah, what one of the formats we could do is a board workshop, I guess, and kind of like what Mr. Stark just said, is have staff present. But, you know, as Mr. Garcia knows, this is a very complicated issue. And districts are struggling with this. I'm chairing a WASP visit right now and had a meeting with the district the other day. And especially for CTE, this is very difficult. Mm-hmm. When you, my concern about setting, I want to make sure I use the right word, enrollment minimums, is that you can lose. As a discussion I had with a couple of other directors recently, you can actually kill a program and lose the teacher by doing that. And then it's very difficult to find an instructor. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example of programs where this is very difficult right now for adult ed across the board, is anything regarding health occupations. CNA especially, or LVN programs, it's very hard to find these instructors. So when you make these decisions, there's the repercussion of losing that instructor who's got to find money, have, you know, make a living, going somewhere else. And we know that those people are very hard to find. So that's the difficulty that I have sometimes in looking at minimum enrollment numbers, and especially if they're in a policy. I'm just talking, you know, very vaguely here.
Oh, yeah.
Not criticizing anything you're doing.
Exactly.
Later on, you may find yourself in a situation where the program is disbanded and then you don't have an instructor to rebuild.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with Mr. Uriasti. I think there's a lot of those really unique circumstances that, quite honestly, do come down to professional judgment, even with you know, various policies that are in play. Another example would be beginning reading, right? So, you know, at a particular school, you may only have one section of a beginning reading class, and typically those ratios are very low, and they should be low for instructional reasons, right? So there may be cases where you would let a class run maybe even as low as, you know, a single digit perhaps, right? Mm-hmm. I know these words are going to come back to haunt me, right? But I don't know, are there any principles in here? Sorry. But the reality is you have to look at it.
You have to worry about
it. What I'm saying is you have to look at it from a more comprehensive, mm-hmm. holistic point of view as you're building an instructional program in a, you know, in a particular school, and realizing that in some cases you will have classes that are lower for reasons that Mr. Idiosti mentioned. You're starting a new CTE program, or in some cases there may be state requirements in terms of ratios. You know, for example, some of the medical programs can only be a certain ratio, you know, when they go out to clinical sites, et cetera, because of supervision. Basically, yeah, I'm just agreeing with my colleagues on that, that it is a very complicated and nuanced, you know, issue with regard to class size. I wouldn't want us to get too, you know, into arriving at a hard and fast number per se, consortium-wide. I think there's a certain point at which we want to keep that, we want to stay flexible in that regard.
I do want to add, Ms. Grossi, because you mentioned Burbank here. One of the, and I'm going to be a little vulnerable here, what I will tell you is that one of the things that I've tried to work very much with staff here is to distinguish between first day enrollment and what our actual attendance is. So I'll have people, you know, that will say, well, you know, what's the enrollment in this ESL class? And they'll say, well, there's 43. And I'll say, okay, well, that's what you have on the roster first day as enrolled. But when you go in there, what you find is 28. So from henceforth, please don't tell me that we have 43 enrolled, because what we actually have showing up is 27 or 28. So we have to make that adjustment. And that's something that we're still dealing with here in terms of distinguishing between what was actually enrolled on the first day and what we actually have attended.
And then that's one of the key points that I'm looking at as I reflect and going into my administrators going into the classrooms, you know, and I'm asking, okay, what are the true numbers that we're looking at? Because, like you said, the roster could show one thing, but yet when you go and see the seats, and there's another number altogether. And I'm just trying to solidify that because I'm trying to make sure that we are effectively staying within our program to be an effective member for LARIC as well. Because I know that was one of the findings from the audit, saying that maybe our enrollment wasn't as large as it should be in certain classes, and we still kept classes open. So that's something I'm looking to do, if I have to do, in regards to making sure we are efficiently serving our students and our community. And I don't want to be, I want to be transparent, and I know I keep saying that, and making sure that I'm following what the recommendations are from the audit, and also being an effective member within the consortium as well.
So I appreciate that LACCD has to sort of play out of this discussion because we have different reporting requirements and the like. However, I would caution from a fiduciary point of view of this board, we, other than having a workshop or other than your colleagues providing information as to how they do these things, we as a board cannot be in a position of making a recommendation or taking any kind of an action on that would suggest how Montebello transacts its business. And so this is an issue that Montebello should work out, I believe, with the CDE, with the entity that sent you the notice in the first place. And it sounds like from Mr. Bursati that there is, it's complicated in lots of ways from different districts, and it's a systemic issue, if you will. So that's another reason why the LARIC board probably shouldn't take any particular position. But I'm sure your colleagues would be happy to help you in any way that they can within their scope of responsibility and their responsibility to their districts.
And I don't want to make this meeting go to midnight, but I will tell you that as things are evolving, and at the summit, I went to a wonderful presentation that LAUSD made on IET, and I myself recognized then that you have to meet regional needs. And that's why what may be working for Burbank, Dan,
right,
wouldn't fit necessarily entirely for Montebello. And as we go into the area of IET, we may have to run some of these classes a little smaller. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you're doing a math class for some of your welding students, you may have to run that math class a little smaller because that's what your need is. I can't criticize that. Right. That's what that need is right there. And I think, you know, you have to leave it up to the
You hit the nail on the head because we're actually doing that for our farm tech class right now. We're running a math class for the farm tech class. And it is a smaller number because it's the need. Yeah. Okay. Good discussion point. That's what I'm looking for, and I'll go back to the drawing board.
Okay. Thank you. The next two items were requested by Mr. Joseph Stark, Executive Board Member for the Los Angeles Unified School District.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Studios. Just a clarifying point. So item number six, there's actually no proposal. It's just going to be a discussion item. And to introduce that, I'd like to bring forward Mr. Oberlander, the point person for LAUSD, to just kind of give us a little context for the board and the public, and then I'll kind of take it from there. Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. So, as Pastor mentioned, I'm here to provide context for the discussion of the LAUSD Division of Development for Education administrator to teacher ratio, actually. So per state education code, LAUSD is required to calculate and report on an annual basis the ratio of administrators to teachers. This ratio is not to exceed 8 administrators per 100 teachers. So although the Division of Adult and Career Education has been excluded from this calculation historically, this year we are being included. Furthermore, the district is counting our out-of-class certificated staff as administrators, including teacher advisors and navigators who directly support student transitions to college and careers. We are currently exploring options for how to develop a more equitable administrator-to-teacher ratio that will honor the critical work done by our teacher advisors and navigators and will allow us to fulfill the LARIC commitment of providing comprehensive support to all students.
Great. Couldn't have said it better. Thank you, sir. So kind of building on what Mr. Oberlander presented, essentially what we're looking at is the possibility of bringing an item for the board's approval. And so we kind of wanted to front load this with you and obviously the public. This is really kind of amounts to a compliance issue for LAUSD at this point. You know, as Matthew stated, the district has to comply with what's called the R2 ratio, which is the ratio of teachers to administrators. As our funding is not within the district general fund, it's a separate funding source, and really it's restricted funding that has very specific purposes that are supposed to be aligned to the regional plans. Of course, a key component of that is providing really critical support services for students, so funding various positions, counselors for sure, but also teacher advisors. So in our district, these positions serve as a critical part of the support system for students, and we're really trying to build that out more, but we don't want to sort of get dinged by the district for providing those staffing positions, which could potentially count negatively towards the district R2 ratio. So one of the solutions that we had talked about with our district was to come forward with a proposal, a reasonable proposal, and bring it to the LARIC board. And we want to be really clear that this in no way is intended to be set some sort of precedent for how other districts, I mean, we just had, you know, we're just having this discussion that it becomes problematic to have a one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to, you know, teacher ratios, staffing ratios, et cetera. And so we want to make it really clear that when we would bring this forward, essentially, it's it would be just for approval for LAUSD vis-a-vis its connection with LARIC as a LARIC-funded entity for adult education, and would in no way be intended as setting any kind of policy or precedent for the other member districts. So we're working with our fiscal staff at LAUSD, and you know, we look forward to bringing that proposal forward. And, you know, so I don't have a lot of specifics to share at this point, just other than kind of just a heads up that it's coming. And I mean, if there are any questions at this point, we can answer those. But we'll certainly have that documentation ready for review as soon as we can. I don't know, that's something that we probably want to talk about in terms of board procedures, you know, where if we are going to have items to review and so forth, we want to make sure that those board packets are given to us, you know, well in advance. We all have an opportunity to really look through it, digest it, process it, and prepare questions, et cetera.
If I can, so response to your last item first, and I'm going to go back and ask a clarifying question real quick. I've been in a world of board meetings on Wednesdays for almost my whole career. Turns out that's the time that they do board meetings. So that the general way it works is that Friday night, before close of business, the complete board packets are sent, either electronically or both, to all board members, so they have them over the weekend. And then, depending on the entity that I work with, either by close of business on Monday or close of business or Tuesday by 12 noon, all questions from board members are brought forward to staff, so that staff then has time to respond. And typically, the response is made to all members of the board, so everybody gets the same information. So, as we begin to standardize the way that we do business, that might be something to consider. To Mr. Stark's comments real quick, I want to make sure I understand. So basically, there is the LARIC allocation to LA Unified. Okay. LA Unified is looking at ways to expend those funds that support their program in conformance with the collective bargaining agreements and other standards and practices that the Unified has with its employees. Is that more or less correct?
Yes, and really making the distinction between requirements for K-12 programs and really making a distinction between the requirements for those programs and what we're providing in adult ed, which in many ways is very different in terms of what we're looking at, and, you know, in terms of the support services in particular, when we look at teacher advisors, out-of-classroom support. So it's really a way that we're not sort of getting lumped in, square peg in a round hole, basically. Adult ed is not necessarily getting lumped in with the bigger district in terms of when they have their audit and they're looking at the adult ed program and saying, hey, how come this isn't fitting in terms of ratios or whatever with K-12? And with the thinking is that with the approval of this board and the proposal, that can be a piece that our district can show the auditors, yes, but it's a separately funded program.
Right.
There's different requirements. You know, this was, you know, sort of in agreement with you know, the local board that hosts, you know, that oversees, or, you know, doesn't oversee, I guess, but obviously weighs in on how these funds are used and if they're meeting the requirements and the objectives of the regional plan, et cetera. So it's really just trying to separate those two pieces so that it's cleaner from the district auditing standpoint, if that makes sense.
Right, it does. And then so from my personal perspective, as long as the plan that you are going to present to us complies with all the things you talked about in terms of our regional plan, our LARIC plan, what have you, it results in the metrics that are necessary in terms of serving students and all those types of things, then, again, that's another example of us facilitating and supporting our consortium members and not getting in the way of the manner in which they have to transact their business.
I appreciate those comments, and I want to also, just underscore the fact that by bringing this forward, we're, you know, it's helping, as Dr. Miller said, kind of helping us with an issue in LAUSD, making things a little cleaner, et cetera. But at the same time, we're not looking at setting any broad policy for LARIC.
Right.
So I just want to make that clear.
So you don't have a question, just in case. So I understand the concept and what you need to do in the R2 that's related to your K-12 district and imposing on your adult division. I wonder how that plays into, as we move forward and determine effectiveness and efficiency, and how we all deal with, because the concept of out-of-classroom personnel is a concept when any district is dealing with budget cuts that we all know that are coming down the pike. So it brings to the forefront of my mind how we as LARIC will have to look at kind of the effectiveness and efficiency, direct service to students. Do we have, are our ratios of out-of-classroom personnel high, and then we have waiting lists for classes, or I know it's a separate thing that you're asking about, but I'm wondering how that conversation would play out in LARIC as a whole as we look at effectiveness and efficiency of spending of our money and services to students. So just, it's more of a thought out loud than it is a question.
If there aren't any more comments, then we move on to item number 7, which was also submitted by
Great, thank you. So, I thank the board for indulging me here with a couple items, and also just appreciate the conversations we're having around these very complicated topics that I know many of us have been thinking about for years, probably. And so I think it's healthy to have a lot of these thoughts out loud. I think that's been a long time coming, so I really appreciate the thinking. And I think, as you can tell, we've got some really smart and caring people on this board, and I really appreciate working with them. So in that vein, I want to bring up item 7. Really, again, no proposal here, but really just more some of my own little soapbox, if I may, and I'm sure others might want to weigh in. Moving forward, I have some big concerns about how funds are distributed in the consortium. I think, the last meeting was tough in many ways because I know, speaking personally, I was coming in with an ask, right? And the stakes are very high. We had people sitting in the audience that literally, potentially, jobs were on the line, okay? That's a very stressful situation for yours truly. And I take those decisions very seriously, which is why I wanted to make sure I was prepared with whatever charts, graphs, data people needed to see so that if there were questions about, well, why are you asking for this money, I could respond, and hopefully, in a way that made sense to people. Okay, just kind of looking at our vision, our mission. We want to sustain, expand, improve adult ed, and we want to make it student-centered. Right, that's what we say. Right, but it's not really how we're behaving in terms of how the fiscal decisions are being made. So, I want to share just a couple data points. Only again, not to. In the spirit of collaboration and just bringing some things to the forefront, and I know these are kind of sensitive topics, but I think it really illustrates, I hope, the point I'm trying to make. So, for example, we had some one-time funding that was made available for LARIC, right? And so, just as an example, one district received essentially what amounted to 35% of their entire allocation with that one pot of money. Another district, 46.6%. LAUSD, 3.7%. LACCD, 0%. I don't know how we justify that. I don't know how we justify it. I can only say from LAUSD's standpoint, my only ask was to make sure that whatever we're offering this year, we can still offer the same services next year. Wasn't to grow anything, wasn't to give me a raise, wasn't to give some of those people a raise, although they deserve it. It was, I don't want to cut positions. I don't want people not here next year who are performing vital services to students to not be here because we don't have the money. So as we know and can all agree on, there's not enough AEBG funding to go around. We already know that, which is a whole other issue in terms of advocacy. I think we really need to start ramping up and flexing our LERIC muscle from a legislative standpoint, which is a whole other issue. But I guess I just want to say and echo and bring to the public's attention, you know, there's a recent report that's been released by the Legislative Analyst's Office, came out this month. We can post it on the LERIC website, perhaps. It would be great. One of the recommendations among many was to that really for the state to come up with a per student funding formula. Okay, does that mean we go back to ADA? I don't know. I mean, I kind of hope not, because I think we're on the right track with making it a performance-based, student-centered type program where we're not hamstrung by, you know, you got 30 students in the class. Okay, you're doing a great job, right? That didn't work then, doesn't work now. It's about what are we doing with those 30 students? Are they transitioning, et cetera? Okay. So I think we understand that part. I think going backwards wouldn't be the right approach. But at the same time, as we're looking at making decisions moving forward and being able to kind of look people, you know, with a straight face and say, hey, we're allocating funds based on a student-centered approach versus, you know, I'm coming in with my own personal ask and I'm going to fight and try to get it. And if I don't get it, too bad, right? We're setting up a situation of winners and losers here on this with this LERIC board, and I'm not comfortable with that. And I think we're better than that. And I would say everyone on this board has the same, you know, intrinsic desire to get to a point where we're making student-centered decisions. Of course, we all have realities in each of our districts, harsh political budget realities, etc. But I think at the end of the day, we really do want to make decisions that are student-centered. So I'm just saying I would like to see LERIC lead the way and basically maybe propose something to the state in terms of, hey, here's a student formula that makes sense. Because if we don't think of it, someone else will, and then we'll have to live with whatever that decision is. I think we have a great opportunity as the largest consortium to really flex our muscle here and try to get this right for the sake of students, for the sake of our programs. And so I would just encourage all of us to start thinking about that. And I think in terms of, I'm just going to put this out there, I would like to have our point people start putting together, I think, some work groups. I'd like to make sure we involve our labor partners in this as well. Get some thinking around what's a student formula that makes sense. We've got the answers in the room with our folks, but you know, so I don't think it's something we should get in a little room with five people or two people or whatever and try to figure something out. I think we should get some input, and we should bring those ideas to the table in a forum such as this, and then, you know, eventually get to a point where maybe we can take some action. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves in terms of what the state, you know, may decide. But I don't see any reason why we can't take a leadership role and make some recommendations to the state, given the fact that, you know, it's sort of timely anyway, because we're getting into the next three-year planning cycle. You know, some of these recommendations on the LAO report, folks, I mean, they echo some of the same things that were brought up back in 2009 that the state has still not solved. The credentialing issue is another, as an example, right? So I guess my challenge is, you know, let's lead the way. And let's solve some of the, and bring forward solutions to some of these issues before, with all due respect, other districts in the state that don't have the skin in the game and have the influence that we have or the issues we have, before they're the ones really influencing policymakers, and then we have to live with it, right, and try to make it work for us. So anyway, thank you for your indulgence for my little soapbox there. I appreciate it.
I'll let you go first.
All right. I've been doing a lot of talking. So you don't want to
go first. I think you and I both are.
All right.
Neck and neck.
So first of all, I think Mr. Stark very eloquently stated the case. And I think it was last weekend when I was reviewing the Legislative Analyst's Office relative to community college reporting that I came upon the adult ed report. And as Mr. Stark said, it makes eminent sense. And when I first started on this board, you know, a year ago, year and a half ago, I remember sitting in a board planning retreat and advocating for LARIC and the adult education community in general to lobby heavily all of our state policymakers to recognize that funding adult education in the manner that it was, which essentially was just the AEBG dollars, and allowing school districts not to provide any additional funding, you know, by way of ADA or by way of any other thing, was criminal, and that really the voices needed to be heard in order to generate more revenue. And again, as Mr. Stark alluded to, LA Unified is the 1,600-pound gorilla in the state. LARIC, as it turns out, because of LA Unified and LACCD, we are the 1,600-pound consortium in the state. Collectively, all five of our districts can and should rally our elected officials around what the LAO is saying and see if we can provide some form of additional funding for adult education. The state has got to put its money where its mouth is relative to the outcomes that it expects. And I, too, agree that moving more towards a completion and or performance-based funding formula makes a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. It's no longer about butts in the seat. It really has to be about completion and moving forward. So I think this consortium should take a strong advocacy approach. I think that for those of us who are large enough to have state advocates or lobbyists, if you will, we should try and bring those resources together, add that to our individual government relations agenda, if you will, or our policy agendas, and move forward. I know that the LAUSD superintendent and probably some of the board members would be very supportive of this. I know my chancellor would be supportive of this, and I know a number of our board members would too. So I heartily endorse what Mr. Stark is saying.
And I completely agree that we need to be the group that leads the way in terms of coming up with a formula. I agree that we can't wait for this state to give us the formula. And what I'd like to do in terms of moving forward with our consortium is then put the past where it belongs in the past. And if we're going to, we start with discussing potential formulas based that are student-centered, absolutely student-centered, that include outcomes, that include percentages in terms of effectiveness, that include some concept around base. I think that's what we need to do moving forward. And how we arrived at the formulas that we're using to date, I don't think anybody really likes. And what happened at the last meeting was, and we all like each other, but it was hot. It was very, very hot. And we all, and as you say, said, Joe, Mr. Stark, sorry. There's not enough money in the pot. There's not enough money in the pot for everybody to do what they need to do. And we understand that across the board. But I think that the discussion starting, getting groups together to be involved in that kind of discussion and what those things look like and putting numbers up and recognizing until we get policymakers to change the legislators to put more money in adult ed, we're still going to not have enough. And it's still not going to be enough for any district to do what they need to do. And so we have to figure out that piece too. Because we can all sit here and argue that, you know, I'm going to have to lay off people. However many that people is. However many that people, you know what I'm trying to say. People are. So, but I think we do need to also come to a place where understanding that there will be, that it's not going to be enough, and how do we still operate together? And understand that of course we're fighting for our students and our staff, and it's LARIC as a whole, but when it comes down at the very end and there's not enough, we're still fighting for our students and our staff. So, I concur.
I don't know if there are additional comments, but before we do that, I'd like to make a parenthesis. I'd like to inform the board that we are approaching our regularly scheduled time. I'm going to ask for the indulgence from the audience and the board members to extend our time a little bit so that we can complete all the elements of the meeting. We are 4 minutes away from 3:30, which was supposed to be the ending time of the meeting.
Yeah, I'd like to see. I don't know if this is still learning about Brown Act. Can we just push up public comment? Because I'd hate to keep people. I mean, I know folks are starting to leave, and they may have wanted to make some comment. And, you know, it's my fault that it's certain. I mean, it's all our fault going over. So do we want to move up public comment if that pleases the board?
I would agree with Mr. Stark. I think that we, I would recommend, you know, it's not an action item, but would like to see public comments moved up on the agenda. The other is, I don't know that for the future that we should be indicating an end time.
Right.
I've not attended board meetings yet. A start time, yes, but an end time, no.
Well, and also I'll just add that even if it has an end time, there's nothing that stops the board from continuing from a Brown Act point of view. We can go until midnight. And I've been to many board meetings that have done that. So, but generally speaking, public comment should be at the top of the agenda or somewhere, you know, after somewhere in the top three or four items so that people do have an opportunity.
So I would forego my comments and allow public comment now, but I would like to comment on the legislative analyst report of February of this year.
Excellent. So then we will go then to public comment, and then we will return to Mr. Uriosti's comments on item 7. Okay. So, Ms. Matsumoto, do we have public comment forms? So I am informed that we have only one public comment form, and that is from Mr. Sergio Hernandez.
Good afternoon. My name is Sergio Hernandez. I'm the Chair of Adult Education for UTLA. Yes, I was about to ask about that. Thank you. Common measurements. We've discussed common measurements, which is, first and foremost, we can't measure success unless we agree to what success is going to be. These common measures are different for each school district, and that's where it becomes a little tricky. Really, the question is, what is the format for the dialogue that's going to lead to a healthy discussion around all of these common assessments and common needs? For the quarterly reports, moving on to that, I think having an annual report from the LERIC office is unacceptable. I think a quarterly report is acceptable. Waiting until the year is over and then seeing how it went, it's not going to work moving forward. Likewise, quarterly reports for the LERIC, I'd like to see quarterly reports also include in the future some of the results of these common assessments. You know, it doesn't have to be exactly, you know, up to the minute, but today we can discuss what happened in the first quarter, for example. The last time we met, we had discussions. I saw the discussions around funding. It is what it is. I agree with Ms. Miramontes. Sometimes you just have to know where to draw the line and say, you know, that's the path and we're going to change moving forward. Sorry, Montes. However, I did see that there was an increase, proposed increase, that was sort of underneath the distribution, which was for an increase to the LERIC office. There was no real discussion around it. So I just wanted to point that out, that it's noticeable. Fourthly, yes, funding formula. Let's face it, it's not going to happen soon. But again, the dialogue that needs to be created by the group to have that discussion is something that needs to be brought forward. Lastly, the point person work group, I think, is absolutely great. I know my time's running out, but I'm the only one here, so I'll make it quick here. I just want to say that nothing unites a people like a common struggle. And for my tenure at UTLA, we put the past behind. And when Joe came on board, we looked at what Larrick was doing, and we decided that the best course of action moving forward in cooperation is to look at our common struggle. So when you all speak about what can we do legislatively, how can we lobby, don't forget your labor partners. I am here to say that at UTLA, it's going to benefit us that we all have a united voice for the region. That's my time. Thank you very much.
And I'll just say thank you very much. And we do also have our AFT 1521 unit, and I'm sure they would be interested in helping us with this as well.
All right, and I think that we made the mistake of putting the forms out here on the table with the handouts, and people got the forms as handouts. But just to be sure, is there anyone else that would like to do public comment at this point? All right, so I think that we are free to proceed. Thank you, audiences. We appreciate your indulgence. Thank you, Mr. Hernandez, for your comments. And so we return then to item 7 on the agenda and acknowledge Mr. Uriowski, who had some comments about it.
Yeah, I did read this, and one of the things, again, that gives me pause is when we look at something like this recommendation is the word uniform. And the reason for that is that some programs have the full breadth of the 7 program areas. Some do not. Some programs are more expensive to run than others. CTE and in the future, or those of us implementing IET, there are increased costs there. Per pupil, given the supplies, the materials, the equipment that are needed. So I think that it's not going to be an easy task. And so for me personally, just the word uniform, I think we need to look at that and define that in light of some of these programs that are specialized and have some additional costs to them that would have additional costs per pupil. The other point that they brought up in their recommendations is the fact that fee structures are so varied amongst consortium members, and I think that that is another one. I mean, part of their recommendation was eliminating fees or charging a nominal fee, but that again carries implications for programs that are have a lot of specialized equipment and materials and supplies. And then, frankly, I think another thing that needs to be noted is that of economies of scale, is that for smaller entities to run some of these programs, the unit cost is far greater than for a larger entity to run these programs. So I'm just saying that as we move forward and we look at this, we've got to really look at the complexity of all of this.
Thank you, Mr. Uriowski. Are there any additional comments on item number 7, on discussion item number 7? Okay. I would like to add some comments to that, if I may, because this was actually an item that the executive board tasked the point persons team also with coming up with some suggestions and possible funding formulas. This was as of last month. Unfortunately, we have not had enough time to prepare, but we do have some issues that we'd like to bring forward. On some of the directives that are received by the point persons team, oftentimes or every once in a while we have more questions than we have answers. And so we need to develop some type of mechanism that we can comfortably communicate with the board in order to have clarification and to guide our direction a little bit better so that we can provide the expected outcome or the product that the board is seeking. So right now we don't have any such mechanism, and as we are trying to get used to the world of the Brown Act, you know, we're also trying to be conscientious about not infringing on the Act, but at the same time, we also need to have the ability to understand what direction we're actually being asked to follow so that we can provide the services that are being requested. Yes.
So I want to make two comments. I want to go back to the Mr. Urso's comments regarding the Act and suggest something. Obviously, that LAO report is of great interest to all the consortia around the state right now because it does portend an absolute significant changes and major relief in a number of areas. So I'm wondering if this body should not reach out to whatever the, you know, to either reach out to all the other consortia or a select group of consortia and suggest that a work group be pulled together to develop a plan by which on a state advocacy level we can promote, we can find legislators to carry legislation, we can see if there is agreement on what the LAO is suggesting and move forward and try and support this. Obviously we're all moving toward the May revise and whatever legislation there. I won't answer this question right now, but obviously there are advocates out there who were working with others that resulted in that LAO report in one form or another. So I think if we take a leadership position and try and move forward with some sort of strength in numbers, so to speak, to also grapple with some of the trickier questions that were posed, that would help us. That would help move this discussion faster. To your other point, I think that this group has matured enough that it needs a chair, I'm not volunteering for that role, but that it needs a chair, and that the point persons and you as our senior staff person would then be able to work with the chair as it relates to some of these clarifying questions, would be able to work with the chair in terms of developing the agenda, would be able to be empowered by this group to help you and the point persons to organize their work and prioritize. If we were really going to take that a step further, we might have might determine that we want a chair a chair, a vice chair, and perhaps a secretary, or whatever you want to call it. So there'd be a three-person team, if you will, to help the traffic cops for how we transact our business and in getting things on the agenda, or frankly, prioritizing things for the agenda that might occur instead of next month, it might occur 3 months out because it's a lower priority for us to deal with. Might be able to have preliminary conversations, for example, on this advocacy question that we just talked about. But, you know, Burbank has set up a beautiful setting here. It reminds me that I actually wore a tie today, you may have noticed. So it reminds me that this is very, very important work and we need to take it that way and organize ourselves accordingly.
Your comments are very much appreciated. I was actually planning, and it's a proposal that I bring it up at this point, because one of my last comments was going to be developing some type of protocol to put items on the agenda and organize our work a little bit. I think that Dr. Rulin had some suggestions that she wanted to bring forward. Okay, terrific. And then I wonder if it would be appropriate then, perhaps the point persons team can
come together and define, you know, a number of protocols, and perhaps we can have it as an action item for next meeting, so that we have a way of organizing. Because right now, in essence, you know, when someone needs something on the agenda, you know, they shoot an email to me, we add it to the agenda, and there is no discussion in terms of priorities. You know, the agendas get elongated sometimes, and all of these issues need to be discussed. There's no question about it, and everybody should have access. But it should be equal access to the agenda, right? So that everybody's thoughts and ideas are heard, and the issues are addressed in a timely manner as they come up.
And actually, Mr. Estudias, my experience has been that for future agenda items, that actually occurs while business takes place. So that there would be a time where the board is addressed about future agenda items. So for example, if Dr. Miller had something that he would like reported on, that openly would be brought forward as a future agenda item.
Okay, very good. Are there any additional comments on what we just talked about or item number 7?
I do want to say, in terms of a lobbyist, in California, there are two adult ed organizations, CAIA and CCAE, and K-12 organizations that actually share the same lobbyist, and most of the consortia members of the K-12 adult ed members of the different consortia are part of those organizations. So I think how do we put that together with the community college partners is the piece, because we do have those lobbyists for that.
And Ms. Montes, is that exactly correct? You have three members from this board that are part of CAIA. And I think the lobbyists that we do have currently in place with CCAE and with CAIA would be somebody that maybe we should look into or reach out to and go from there. Because I know, being a past president now of CAIA, we did have members from the community college attend our conferences on a regular basis.
Right.
And we have surrounding community colleges from the different consortiums attend our conferences, even the one that we just had last 2 weeks ago, right? 2-3 weeks ago as well. So I think that's something strongly that we do need to look into, because of the fact, like we've said, we are the largest consortium, and I think we should be spearheading something like this by far. And we need to look at some viable options by far.
Yeah, I agree, and one thing to keep in mind is, I think, and I kind of said it before, I don't mean it to sound, I don't know what the word is, but, I mean, we're a very unique consortium, right? We really are. We're the only one of its kind. We're going to have issues here that, quite frankly, other districts may not necessarily have any interest in, or may just, frankly, not be an issue for them. I mean, one example, which is interesting that it ended up in the LAO report, was, you know, for a while now, we've kind of been working with LAUSD staff, labor partners, on a alleged proposal regarding the teacher credentialing piece of having common requirements across, and the fact that we should be looking at some kind of maybe a professional development, new teacher, orientation, whatever that might look like, that would really meet the needs of our specific consortium. You know, and there it is on the LAO report, right? I know that when working with, CAIA and some of those other boards, they weren't interested in that. When I brought it up, they were like, we've tried that before, it's never worked. Well, again, that's an issue that is very old. That was on the original LAO report that came out, I think it was 2009. And it was the same thing. What are we going to do about this issue of this, system we have, bifurcated system, where it's one set of requirements for this group, another set of requirements, when really they should be the same. So I guess, all for collaboration for sure, but I would like to, I think in many cases it's going to require that, I think, LARIC should be, I think LARIC should take a sort of a more, sort of a stronger role in prioritizing maybe what some of the key ledge priorities we think should be. And it's great if we get other folks to join in, but I can tell you there's probably going to be things that we may not necessarily get support from, you know, the adult schools up north on something, right? I mean, I know, for example, there was a lot of discussion in the adult ed K-12 community around immigration metrics, right? And for many of us, and myself included, I was quite clear that, you know, do we need to add, you know, a whole other conversation about new metrics? I mean, you're hearing it today. We can't even find agreement on, you know, what we already, you know, basic metrics, right? And here we are, we're going to drive the state and legislation on introducing a whole new set of metrics. You know, I was not in favor of that, but yet that was an agenda that was being pushed from a particular agency up north that resonated great with a lot of adult ed organizations. But again, I'm not against it per se, but I think it's an example of something that, you know, quite honestly, I don't know if this is politically correct to say this, but I think we should be leading the way in the state. That's just my opinion.
Any additional comments?
Yeah. I think it's a very delicate balance, Mr. Stark, to lead the way and separate ourselves from the larger group. Part of why I believe, and having been in adult ed for a long time, one of the challenges with our ability to raise awareness and credibility and all those things has to do with opposing views on so many levels that we're not speaking the same language to our legislators who are making decisions about budgets. And so to the extent we have to figure out a way to language to send a message that speaks to legislators that's not just about our one unique district because because that's not going to be enough to change their decisions about everything. So not that I don't think we should lead the way, but we've just got to be careful. And by the way, our CAIA and CCAE board meeting prior to the CAIA conference there was a lot of discussion around the credential issue. So it may not have been that way before, but it was definitely a conversation brought up. So again, just something that we need to be aware of in terms of setting ourselves apart.
Yeah, and that wasn't actually what I was suggesting in terms of being separate from or coming up with our own agenda, kind of leaving everybody out in the dust. I mean, it's more, I just don't think we're exerting enough influence, I guess. I would like us to exert more influence because one of the things that's very striking to me with, you know, some of these groups, CAIA, CCAE, there's virtually no representation from the community college. And that's a problem because, as we've seen with some of the recent board actions, I mean, LACCD needs to have skin in the game. Otherwise, we're nowhere. And, you know, yes, K-12, we've been through some rough times with funding and all that stuff, but, you know, we really need to be working together, I think, to flex our muscle and help drive the agenda more. And I'm not saying we, like, trample over people and leave them in the dust, but I just think we should be exercising a little greater influence over, you know, kind of shaping what that agenda is. And I think we haven't really so far, is what I'm saying. And I think we have a great opportunity with the relationships that we've cultivated with our community college partners that, you know, it's not just K-12 issues, community college, it needs to be our issues. We can't have continued, this lobby group is asking for this, this lobby group is asking for this. We have to get on the same page. That's what I'm trying to say.
And, you know, the LAO usually doesn't put out a report unless the state advocacy groups, such as the associations you're talking about and others in the state, bring enough issues to their attention. The other thing they pointed out in that report is that the system, the adult education funding model they put into effect, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, just isn't working. Even these consortia are not working to the degree that they were envisioned. So it's incumbent upon all of us to actively engage and to be part of the solution and to take a leadership role, but to try and to be cognizant of everybody's situation along the way. And at the end of the day, it really boils down to two things. Having enough funding to exact the outcomes that the state is looking for. And so, you know, we have to be cautious that we don't overly complicate whatever the answers are, but that we put a funding formula in place that results in the outcomes that they're looking for, which are really completion and performance-based and not just butts and seats. So I think there's enough people here that are already working on it, not only in our group but around the state, but we just have to rally together and be a common voice on the two critical points. What do you want us to do and provide us money? And by the way, the state economy is such now, and the additional Prop $98 that are going to be available this year and at least through, I think, 1920, before the next recession might hit in 20 and beyond, now's the best time to grab that money. As a matter of fact, Anthony Portantino had just put a bill out to requesting an additional $1 billion for K-12 school districts to deal with the inequities of the LCFF for school districts that do not serve those that are below the poverty level and those who have greater needs. So there's money out there to do things, and adult ed should grab for its piece right now while there's money to work with. And if it doesn't, it may miss the opportunity.
Okay, I'm just going to ask two things. Now, we have a late request for public speaking, so if it pleases the board, we will entertain that. That's from our very own Dr. Adrienne Mullen. And after that, would the board like to take a break, maybe 5 minutes, and then we can come back to the last item, or should we continue?
We'll just keep going.
Okay, terrific. So, probably come in 3 minutes, please.
So, my question is, I support us taking a greater role in the state picture and trying to set the agenda, but the board dynamics have not changed. When we started this board in 2013, our goal was different. It was to write a 3-year plan. Our organizational structure on this board hasn't changed since that point, but our work is different. So I strongly encourage you to look at a chair, vice chair model, because that will help lead the meetings, help strategically plan our work, as well as create our voice within the state. And I think that needs to be put on as a discussion and an action item in the future, because as point people, we can move so much, but we can't move it without the direct leadership of you all involved with that process. So I encourage you to really look at that seriously. Thank you.
Thank you. So moving on the agenda, we go on now to discussion item number 8. That item was requested by Ms. Veronica Montes, Executive Board Member for Culver City Unified School District.
Thank you. So I think we touched a little bit on it in Mr. Garcia's when we talked about LARIC office expense report, the idea of an expense and maybe activity report as we build a larger support staff for you, Lancey, for the LARIC office. But one of the things in the process that we've already voted, we have voted on the number of people that we were hiring and the positions. So this does not require a secondary action item. The hiring process and membership support, I want to make sure or talk about how for the non-classified positions within the LARIC office that the point people, so maybe taking ourselves out of it, the point people work with you to review the applicants, the teacher advisor applications, because my understanding is that LAUSD HR will screen for credential requirements, minimum requirements, HR does not tell a school who they can interview. So my request is that the point people be part of the review of applications and then also be part of the interview panel for the advisor positions that will be supporting the whole LERIC groups.
Right, and the position that I occupied, the LAUSD made the concession to have board members be part of the panel that selected me for this particular position. In terms of the two positions that we are talking about, the teacher advisor positions, the Los Angeles Unified School District made the same commitment to the board. Now, with respect to the hiring process, that's beyond my scope of influence, so I will let Mr. Stark answer that on behalf of the school district.
But before Mr. Stark answers, though, we voted on the hiring of two teacher advisors to support the LERIC office. I understand that we'll talk about the procedures for LAUSD, but you as the project manager, I would imagine, would be involved in the interview process and the selecting of applicants. If that's not the case, then we have that system in itself is flawed, because how would anybody else do that? Mm-hmm. And so given that we have put our representatives, given that we put the authority in our representatives for us, then having the point people and you as part of both the review and the interview panel seems the most equitable in our LERIC organization. And I'm very concerned if that's not even a possibility.
Yeah. So I just want to make a few comments. I guess the first question would be, because, with HR processes, and I would imagine all of us are involved in those, it can be a very, very sensitive work, obviously. And ultimately, as the district taking responsibility for this, LAUSD, I want to make sure that we're operating in a manner that I can defend and meets muster with the agreed upon processes that the district has agreed to, in collaboration with labor partners and others. I'm not comfortable making changes without, changes to processes that we've, in sort of using a process that we used for Mr. Asturias' former position, or the new position, rather. I was comfortable using that same process. I'm not comfortable making changes unless we really get into some nitty-gritty in terms of what those changes are going to be. But I think before we start interfering or getting into whether or not we need to make changes in HR policies or hiring processes, I guess I need to be clear on what the concern is and what problem are we trying to solve, right? So if there's a board member who's concerned that somehow we're not doing a process with integrity or whatever the case may be, let's get that out on the table so we can address it, right? If the concern is, well, we want to make sure there's representation in terms of the final selection process, we've already made that accommodation, right? And, of course, we agree that that is important, which is why we opened it up in terms of the interview panel.
So let me see if I can kind of quickly mediate this, for lack of a better word. I apologize if that's the wrong word.
Perfect word.
What I think I heard my colleague, Ms. Monty, say is that Culver City and she want to be certain that we that LERIC has a voice on the interview panel, the applicant's selection panel and the interview panel. Then I heard my colleague to my left here, Mr. Stark, say that the LA Unified is allowing LARIC to use the same process that we used. One of my better decisions this year was sitting on the interview committee that selected you for the position that you now have. And I sincerely mean that. So it seems to me that if we're comfortable with following the exact same process, and maybe that process didn't include the applicant screening, but I think it did, but if not, I think the interview committee needs to get together, select those that we're going to interview, and then make a recommendation. I believe that process is what you're talking about. I don't think we can necessarily delegate that to the point people. I think we as executive committee members have to maintain that responsibility because that's what the process was, so that's a little different, I think. But if that's what we're talking about, is that what we're talking about? Is that...
Yeah.
Okay. Does that work for you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I just want to be, because we're kind of getting into some nitty-gritty here, so I just want to be clear. So we're all in favor and have operated from a standpoint of being inclusive and collaborative when it comes to selecting these positions, right? That said, the responsibility does fall on me to hire these positions, right? So if there are questions, if there are, why did this happen? You know, if there's an audit of some kind,
yeah, that's why I like.
They're not going to, go to Culver City. They're not going to go to Montebello. They're not going to ask anyone on this board what happened with the hiring process. If someone, how come I didn't get an interview, right? Or hey, that person got the job. They weren't qualified. How come they were selected, right? These things happen, right? And I have to then be prepared to, you know, in some cases, defend the process if it needs to be. So it needs to happen. The process needs to happen with integrity, consistency, according to really well-defined standards. So all I'm saying is we're using the same process that we used previously. If the board is recommending a change to that in some way, I'm not saying no right now. What I'm saying is I can't authorize that at this meeting. I would have to go back and, you know, work with our HR department, make sure, you know, there's no issue with it. And before doing that, I guess, again, my question is, if there's something wrong with the process, if people feel like, hey, there's something wrong with the integrity of the process, so I feel like we need to have XYZ different than what we had last time, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But I would, before we start, or I would have to go kind of researching this, I just want to know if, in fact, there's that concern there.
Well, we haven't done this before. These are the first positions we're hiring for LARIC besides right. Project manager.
Right.
So this is...
So they're certificated positions, right? So we're talking about certificated positions.
Certificated positions,
right.
That support all... We understood that when we looked at the posting and job descriptions and we talked about all of that, we understand that the application process through LAUSD, that exists. I think in the spirit of collaboration and in the spirit of transparency that it's really important that the process of selecting and interviewing be something that is LARIC, that we're all involved in. I don't see that as being a problem. I think that's... creates the collaborative nature and the transparency.
Right. And we're agreeing to all of that. We're agreeing to everything you just said. And there will be representatives, and I think that's part of what we're asking today in terms of who from LARIC would like to be on the interview panel. So if there, again, because that's the process we've already used, it's already been agreed upon. I hadn't heard that there were any problems or issues with that process. I think the proof was in the pudding. We had applicants, and as far as I'm concerned, the best person got the job. And so I guess, again, if there are, you know, changes in terms of how we want to do that, that's fine. I'm not saying that we can't look into it, but I can't guarantee that it's going to happen exactly the way certain members on the board want it to happen. If if the board feels that another district should handle the hiring because of XYZ, then we can make that decision as a board. All I'm saying is, if it's happening through LAUSD, you know, it, ultimately I'm responsible for that, and the board has delegated that authority to me, right, to make sure that there's a process in place that we, you know, with integrity and standards and all those things, so that we, you know, ultimately the goal is to select the right individual for the position. So I'm not being anti-collaborative. I'm not trying to stonewall anybody. There's no secret, dark secret going on. You know, we've been very collaborative in terms of, you know, in the past with the interview panels. But, you know, the reality is how far does it need to go, and where do we cross that line and now we're micromanaging staff, right? When they've been entrusted to do a certain process that the board has delegated to them. That's my concern.
I'm not sure who delegated what process to whom.
So the board took action, right, to have LAUSD hire the individuals, did it not?
Yes, they did.
Okay. That's the action I'm talking about.
What's the publication piece of the actual positions? Is it on EdJoin? Is it just? Is it on all sites? I mean, this is, if it's LARIC, it should be on the LARIC website. It should be on EdJoin. It should be on all sites here, Montebello, LA, Grove City.
Well, as far as that is concerned,
yeah, what's the publication?
The positions were published on EdJoin.
Okay.
And the postings were given to each one of the point persons team members. For them to do as they wish. I mean, you know, we don't mean to indicate to each district how they post or not an LAUSD-based position, right? It is for LARIC, granted, but, you know, then again, we have those issues with each one of the districts, right? So we made it available to the point persons team, and we said, please be sure to share.
Okay.
And it was also an angel.
Okay.
You know, I just want to comment on something because Bob said something a while ago, and you know, as you process it, I think that what we're discussing here is one of those, I don't even know what the word is, phenomena of a consortium model that wasn't well thought out. And so I think that we've been trying to do the best we can in understanding that since it started, and now it's evolving and getting more complex. But as I look at it, is what we've been handed is this model, and on issues like this, it's difficult, it's very complex to deal with. And I don't know, I can't speak for RHR, I will not, I'm just processing quickly here. I don't know that on our website that we could advertise a position that is linked to the LAUSD. I'm not criticizing the fact that it is. I'm just sharing that it's complicated, and you know, it is.
It's muddy. So maybe I can help move the discussion by suggesting that we select two of us to work with Lanzi on the process and the selection of these individuals, that two executive committee members be delegated the authority through us to work with Lanzi and LA Unified's employment process and select the people that we need to select, so that
right.
We can move forward.
So to be sure, I just want to make sure that the board understands that as far as I am concerned, however you guys decide to proceed, you know, that's how we proceed. The other thing that I also want to make sure is that we are respectful of whatever policies each district has, right? Because each one of you have the opportunity to take this on, and
we're done with that, because the bottom line is that LA Unified is empowered to hire these positions. The only thing that we're interested in is to make sure that there are voices heard that can weigh in with the interview committee on the selection of the individuals from other members of the consortia. So again, I put on the table that two members, or three, if you really feel you want three, whatever you want, be made part of this process and can help screen the applications and select the candidates. The finalists, I should say.
So that was the intent from the beginning, to have representatives on the interview panel. It was not the intent to have them in the screening process for the applications. Okay. So that, from my understanding, has already occurred. LAUSD staff did the screening, just like LAUSD staff did the screening for the previous position. And when we're talking about processes like this, you know, I gotta say to my colleagues here, you know, we can't lock the door after the horse has left the station, right? Or whatever the saying goes. So if we're going to change a process, sorry, I totally got that wrong, but it's late in the afternoon.
Horse, barn, cows,
Grandpa
whatever.
Would be very Stables. Disappointed. You know, I don't have a problem with discussing openly if we want to make changes to processes. I don't have a problem with that. We can't do it after we've already started something and we've already, in essence, agreed to a certain process that has been completed in the past. And by all accounts, people didn't have a problem with it. I guess. I don't know. Maybe folks are feeling different about it now. The time to revisit that is at the beginning, before the positions are posted, not after they've been posted, not after there's already been the screening, etc. So at this point, what you know, we're again acting consistently with what we've done in the past. We're inviting members from the LARIC board to sit on the interview panel, and that's what's on the table.
Okay. So with that understanding, which I totally understand, I do believe it would be appropriate to move forward with the process, interview those candidates that have been screened into the pool, and hopefully be able to make a decision. If not, then the process gets thrown out and we start all over again. But I would just submit that there's a desperate need for additional help for this consortium. So if you're not happy with the candidates, you're going to cause other problems. So I would hope that we would be able to, you know, accept the candidates as they are through the process that existed. The next go around, maybe try to change the process working with HR, but for now, this is the process that we've got and was approved and accepted. So I would suggest that we move forward on the basis of appointing members of this body to the interview committee and see where we end up after that. So who would like to volunteer for the interview committee?
Me.
So we have Ms. Montes as one. Who else would like to volunteer? And Emilio Silverbank? Are you good?
I'm good.
Okay, so we'll have the representative from Culver City and Burbank.
Okay. So I know last time around I was very intentional in wanting to invite a representative from the community college, right? So I'm just putting that out there in all transparency. I think it would be helpful not to say it has to be you per se.
Well, I would do this. I would either volunteer Dr. Mullen, or I will do it if Dr. Mullen is very occupied as the point person to do this. But I think you're right. I think the voice of community colleges should be heard on this. So I can do it, Ms. Mullen.
So I'm willing to step aside.
No. I think there's three of us. Is the point? There would be three of us. That's all.
I thought Dan wanted to.
No.
Oh no, I think Dan said he's got enough on his plate. That's what I saw. So do you want to? Well, I tell you what. It'll either be Dr. Mullen or myself. How much more work I have to do between now and that time? Is that what you're saying?
Can I add one more thing?
So what one of us would be on it? That's accepted to the board. One of us will be on.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
And this is more from a standpoint of maybe I'm not telling Joe at all how to do his job, but I know that sometimes in collective bargaining agreements there is language even for paper screening. So I don't know whether that's something that would have to be looked at in terms of who could even participate in that. Maybe there is not, and so that's, I'm talking about for future, okay, not for right now.
Yeah.
The process is what it is, but I know that sometimes there's that's in the collective bargaining agreement.
So I think we can revisit that.
No, absolutely. And I'm open to all that again. I just feel like in the future, though, we should get all these issues out on the table ahead of time versus operating with a certain understanding and then in the middle of the process hearing that it should be done a certain way. Because I think, from my point of view, I think when we empower staff to move forward with a project, right, and how we understand it's this is a mousetrap in a lot of ways, right? If anybody remembers that old Milton Bradley game. You know, we're trying to do the best we can in a very challenging structure, right? You know, which means that certain member districts, because LARIC isn't an entity, right, but a collection, a republic, right, as Dr. Miller says, ultimately it comes down to we need this district to take lead on this project, right? Which means that then, as a board, in essence, we're saying, we have trust and faith that you're going to carry this out in the way that we would like it to be carried out. Now, I'm not saying that precludes any kind of collaboration or participation. What I am saying is, as a board, if there are specific requirements, you know, additions, edits, whatever, that needs to be vetted and discussed openly ahead of time before we move forward. Because if it isn't, then I think it comes across, and rightfully so, as potential kind of micromanaging staff, right? You know, and I don't, I'm not in favor of that because, you know, if there's one member attempting to do that, you know, that obviously would be a concern to the other members, right? So I just think in the future, if there are concerns about the hiring process, additions, changes, another district wants to take it on, whatever that is, let's get it all sorted out in advance and well ahead of time. That's my recommendation to the board.
So with all due respect to your comments, I have brought up questions. I have asked for clarification. We have meeting minutes from prior meetings, and prior to the Brown Act, there were conversations that we had that I asked questions and I asked for clarification. So this is not the first time that I'm asking for additional clarification for process or any of these things. This is not the first time that this conversation is coming up.
So I don't want us to leave here until people, you know, I guess are clear on, and everyone's clear, what are the items that were never answered? What do we need to have staff report back on? I mean, let's get that out on the table. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
I'm going to chime in. I think this, Veronica, I'm not speaking for you, but I'm going to say this anyways. Maybe the housing of the LARIC personnel or office, they're based all out of LA Unified. You know, that is what it is. But, you know, influence could, I'm not saying, Joe, you're influencing, but say they're all based out of Montebello. I mean, I could be accused of trying to influence what's going on. I think they should be in a central location, viable for all members. I think that's something we need to discuss in regards to just the personnel itself. So the personnel location is, I think, one thing we need to address as well. Because the fact that I'm looking for equitable amount of personnel that are going to be at one location, I think that plays a part of it as well. Because if they're based all out of Montebello and I see them every day and I can ask them for questions, that kind of runs in favor to Montebello. And I'm not saying LA does that. Joe, you've got a ton of stuff going on, so I know you don't even have time, a lot of time. But I think there needs to be some type of boundaries where we're all able to, I mean, Lansley, you've been very accommodating when I'm calling you or texting you, trying to get a hold of you, I mean, which is great. But, you know, I don't even know where the staff is based out of. Are they all based out of the main office where I saw you that one time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
You know, so I would like to see something like that. We're paying, but we have this, you know, personnel there, office. It's not really an office. It's based out of, you know, L.A.
Yeah, so I would suggest that we're getting a little bit in the weeds now.
Yeah.
I think this is a very healthy conversation, a very good conversation. Everybody's getting their feelings out, which is, well, not only their feelings, but the facts out on the table. So that's important. As far as staff allocation, where they might go, you know, they could They could be assigned one day, you know, it's a five-day work week. They, you know, they could spend half their day, a full day, whatever. They could spread themselves around because it's LARIC dollars, and every district needs to benefit from the staff. I think that's Stan's point. Mm-hmm. So these things can be worked out. We would expect our project manager, whatever, you know, Lindsay's official title is, to figure that out. That's what he's there for, and do what's necessary for the best interest of the consortium.
Yeah, I agree. And I just think, you know, if there are concerns about the work and what's being done or what isn't being done, I mean, let's find out what those are and bring them on the table and fix it, if there actually are, you know. But I think there's been a lot of sort of general comments made, some of which I'm a little concerned about, because I'm hearing that there might be undue influence going on or whatever. And I don't know. So I'm a little concerned about some of the things that have been said. It sounds like there's some other things under the surface that people, you know, are concerned about now that I haven't heard before. So it doesn't make any difference to me personally, because, you know, we should be open and transparent about the work that's being done. And if folks aren't happy with it and want to see it done a different way, then I think people need to come forward with some recommendations about what that is, and not bring it up through other avenues, I guess. And let's get specific about what the issues are, what the problems are, if any, that we're trying to solve, and come up with some recommendations to solve them.
Are there any additional comments on discussion item number 8? Okay, so thank you for your input. Moving right along on the agenda, we have reached the announcements, and we do not have any announcements at this time. The next item was public comment, which we have already done. We're closing now. And then we have board member comments and responses.
Yeah, I think we've done enough.
We're all set.
I think you heard more than enough.
We're supposed to wait till the end?
Oh. Good luck with this group.
Yeah, right.
Okay, no. So if there aren't any comments or responses, then we like to announce the next meeting is going to be on March 16, 2018. I would like to front-row to the board that, again, the point person's team and myself were tasked with looking into Brown Act training. We have reached out to a firm to provide that training, and as we get additional details, we will provide you with that information. Hopefully, particularly the point person's team, the executive team has already had some training. The point person's team is in desperate need of this training, and so we're hoping that we can do this next meeting on March 16th.
At this meeting?
At the open meeting, yes, sir.
I have to say that given the business of the consortium that we have in front of us, to have a Brown Act training or Brown whatever it is training during our board time, I don't think that's a very efficient use of our time. I think some of us have a familiarization with it, so I'm not sure that, you know, frankly, that I would need the training per se, mm-hmm. although some of you may disagree. But so I would not, I don't think we should do it during our meeting time. I think some of the topics that we talked about today is a much better use of our board's time than Brown Act training. And if necessary, I think we call a separate meeting and people can go at that point. My thoughts.
Absolutely. You know, again, we have no problem doing that. As of the last meeting on January 19th, and the directive was to have a training during an open meeting.
Okay. So well, as you can tell, we're an evolving group here.
yes.
But I think that there's, you know, so that's just my opinion. If everybody wants to have the training, that's
so
fine.
Dr. Miller, again, here in Burbank, when that has occurred, yeah. I believe that was under the auspice of a board workshop.
Yeah.
And where that was open actually to the public as well, in terms of and mm-hmm. staff regarding Brown Act training.
Yep.
So
mm-hmm.
that's something we might want to consider. But I think it really would wear and tear on the audience members, as well as, frankly, on the board and staff, to do it all at one time.
Okay, no problem. So what we will request is a number of options. We will present the options, and then we can decide on whatever is more practical.
Well, if this is not appropriate, because I guess it's not an action item, but I think if we can have just sort of some consensus understanding that a board workshop is the way to go on this, and then we don't need to see a bunch of options.
We'll since it's not an action item, can we just nod our heads?
Yeah. So I think that would be the preference.
Okay. Very good. No problem.
And I again, not an action item, but I would like to see for the future the public comment moved up to the very top, and also comments from board members moved up as opposed to at the end.
All right, so and this is actually going to my humble understanding of the Brown Act. Basically, the board is supposed to hear comments from the public before the action items, is my understanding. And
but not general comments. General comments go
right
at a different time.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, no problem. So, but duly noted, we'll report the comments at the beginning.
Yeah, and then, and just to be clear on you know, it's been my experience for, you know, being staff to boards for more years than I want to admit, that it's not inappropriate for any member of the board, if there's consensus by the board members at the table, to direct staff to take an action. It doesn't have to be agendized, just to be clear on that. As long as now, we as a body might say before items can hit the agenda, there needs to be a majority that agree to that. That's a whole other topic. But generally speaking, in the course of a meeting, if something comes up and we all say, you know what, we would like Lanzi to get so-and-so, that's absolutely acceptable. There's no reason why not. Our parliamentarian over there seems to be agreeing.
You're driving me crazy.
Yeah. But you have to admit, we're getting better, right?
And I apologize, we still have a lot to learn, and I appreciate the comments and the tips. But duly noted. Thank you.
I drank two glasses of water.
Okay, next meeting will be on March 16th, and with that,
we need a motion.
This meeting is...
We need a motion.
I'd like to make a motion to adjourn.
Yes, sir.
Second.
Sorry. Not a
turn. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thanks, everybody,
right,
for your patience.
You.
Thank
you.
Two of you. That kind of go.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you. All right. Sir. Thanks for hosting.
Of course. Yeah, really. Thank you. Great. Yeah, good job. Thank you. You bet. Okay, very good. I will. I'll jump on. I've got to finish something up real quick, but I'll jump on it real quick as soon as I can. All right. Thanks. Bye bye.
You're just sitting on top of
it. See if there's a room available, and then I will close the loop again and be on a three-way. Think about all the food.
comments on the topic. Okay, I'll do it. Thank you, Jeff. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I'll be happy to serve on it. I just didn't want to do...
And that's okay. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we can split them if it comes down.
No, that's... I don't know. You have to sign. I don't know where you sign because
right
it says... So would you be president or vice? You'd be president, chancellor. Are you there?
See,
okay, it's right there. And then I'll take it and turn it. And then you need to figure out what the limit is. So should it just be like 2,000 or I don't know. I don't know what this. I don't know what the going rate is.
It's 2,500.
Okay, so just put that. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, and I'm off on Monday.
Okay, enjoy.
You said that I could do that.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.